Lamb for him.
Possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your world champion, Dallas Mavericks, and the NBA. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter, noted author and statesman, contributing writer to MavsFastBreak.com and Mavs.com. His mama calls him Brian, but you know him as Ballin' with Brian, Mr. Brian Gutierrez. And of course, finally, back from several vacations and ailments, is Irving Zone, the belligerent ball fan, model American and professional man of leisure, Mr. Tim Koger.
Boys, how we doing?
Haven't seen you in a long time.
Home sweet home. It's good to be back.
Did you forget where Texas was? What's the deal?
I've been gone. I've been on a journey.
Have you been gone since November?
I've been on a nomadic journey.
Was it fun?
To the islands of Hawaii. Where else have I been? No, I guess I was just gone. Y'all had two shows the whole time I was gone.
We had two shows that were close together, and so you missed both. But then you were sick, so I didn't see you for a long time because then you were sick at and having your Lamar Odom stomach ailment.
It was a Lamar Odom ailment.
It almost knocked you out as long as that one knocked him out. Actually, half as long.
But I think mine was more legit than his was.
You weren't eating candy corn all the time to contribute to the problem.
Or Skittles. Isn't Skittles his candy of choice?
He loves everything.
I'll guarantee you he gets down on some Skittles.
Yeah. He gets down on everything, really. He loves candy. I remember one day after a game he gave us candy. Once he was done. I think it was licorice, I think.
Licorice is okay.
I'm down for that.
But anyhow, it's good to be back.
Glad to see you back. Glad to have the full complement of folks here. Episode 58.
Yeah.
Episode 58 here on Wednesday, May 2nd.
It's May.
2012.
Could have fooled me.
We're in May. My yard is in full swing. I'm very pleased with the results. I have greenness everywhere. Minimal weeds. Things are blooming. Things are looking good. And the NBA playoffs are here. Finally. Finally. Could not have come a day later for my sanity. The playoffs have put an end to the craptastic regular season. The worst regular season in recent memory. The worst regular season maybe ever.
11-71?
I mean, yeah, but you knew going in. This was just a beating because it was just a beating. You knew going into that they were bad. And 11-71 and 13-69, you knew that. And 20-60 or 22-60 or 20-62, whatever that other one was. But anyway, here we are midway through the first round. First time that we have been able to get back together since the playoffs started. But we're here to talk about it, break it down, and obviously we find ourselves, along with the world champion Mavericks, looking at an 0-2 hole to the 2 seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team who we expected would give us a dogfight despite their high seed, and they have.
Not to be confused with high C.
Not to be confused with Brian's favorite drink, high C.
Love me some high C.
They've won the first two games by a grand total of 4 points, and at least for me, boys, all of the fears about what ailed this Mavericks team have been fully realized in these last two games, despite what I believe has been, you know, better energy, better cohesiveness, and generally, you know, satisfactory performances from most individuals, not playing the center position. That's not a good thing.
The question that was posed to start this off was, do you feel better or worse about the Mavs' chances after the first two games? And I'm pretty much not in the worst category, but I'm not necessarily in the better category. Because basically what you've seen are...
You didn't come in with, like, super high flying.
I said if it was going to happen, it was going to happen in seven for Dallas, and I still feel that's going to be the case. Basically, what you've seen is two games of 48-minute basketball or two flips of a coin, basically, from what I've seen. Because ultimately, it's come down to the last 2 to 3 minutes or even the last minute of these two games, and it's either been Durant hitting a great shot over Jan Mahimi further back and Sean Marion right up on him, or Jason Terry missing two long threes to tie the game to go into overtime. So it's been game two looked worse than game one from the sense that the Mavericks fell as far back as 16, but they made their run to come back into it. But again, over the course of this year, it's been late game execution that hasn't worked out. But Oklahoma City hasn't really looked like a world beater to me by any stretch of the imagination. So
no, they've had guys find nuts, and I always talk about getting pissed when somebody finds a nut. And in the first game, Serge Ibaka found a nut.
Serge Ibaka
found a nut,
and then, he found then, nuts against the Mavs all season.
Yeah,
good one. That was nuts. Great live.
Thank you.
That was and nice. And then I like that.
Second game, Derek Fisher found a nut, and that's finding
A nut.
But
that, yes.
Serge Ibaka, though, scoring 22 points, including a three-pointer in a game that
nut.
Ends up being a one-point.
Agreed on that, nut.
Nut. So there's a difference there, but here's why I do feel worse, and it's only marginally worse, because like I said, I didn't come in expecting the Mavericks to control games against OKC. I didn't. Even control a game for some stretch of time and then lose. I didn't expect that. I expected it to be nip and tuck and hopefully things work out for you. Obviously, they didn't. But the reason I feel worse is because the things that we've seen over the course of the season that troubled me the most, which were sloppy play at the worst possible time, inopportune turnovers, inability for ancillary contributors to step up and score, not so much defend, but score, and inability to close quarters. And those things have killed Dallas in these two games. Everything else, Kidd has played well. He's raised the level of his game. He didn't have a lot of shots fall in the second game.
He's scared of
but
layups.
He's played well. He looks rested. He's been fine. Dirk's been fine. Jet has mostly been fine. We can talk about what the coaching staff of Oklahoma City has tried to do to take him out of the game later. But, you know, it's not like anybody is stinking up the joint except for the centers, which I didn't expect. So that makes me feel worse because that was so unexpected and undocumented throughout the season. And the other things make me feel worse because they were so well documented throughout the season, yet so seemingly correctable. All the things that we pointed out that were supposed to stem those things, better rest and more practice and a better schedule, all should have meant that you have better ball movement and fewer turnovers and close quarters better and bench guys like Vince Carter or Delonte West have an opportunity to have a breakout game because they're more in the flow of things. Those all were supposed to be correctable in the atmosphere of the playoffs, and those have been the things that have basically led to you losing the first two games. So I do feel worse, but because the games are so close, I'm not like horrible, you know, because it's kind of pretty close to what I expected. I just hate to see, I guess, the sloppiness is the number one thing. The other things I can live with, but the fact that there's been such sloppiness, poor close to quarters, that's so correctable. It kills me. It kills me because that's so correctable and so mental.
Here's the thing. On one hand, all Oklahoma City did was hold serve, right? They held serve on their home court.
Sure.
And by the Mavs could have easily be up 2-0 going back to Dallas, and everyone's got their chest sticked out a little further, you know? Or stuck out a little further. Sticked out's not really a word. But you're probably going to need to mark that anyway. But
sticked out.
Words are tough.
But at the same time, the Mavs are lost these two games by the same thing that's cost them games all season, and that's, to Brian's point, the late-game execution.
Well, I don't know if it was voluntary.
Man, what was I thinking there, dude?
Stroke.
So I'm not optimistic that that's just going to change overnight because I've watched 66 games. And I never saw that.
That's what makes me feel bad. That's what makes me, when I have my moments of, oh, just end it, get me to the draft. Basically, I think I said on Twitter the other night, I said, can someone just put me down and revive me the couple days before the draft? Because it's just torturous.
I'm just hoping the AAC crowd is, you know, rowdy, loud, and proud. Our rims are a little more friendlier to us, you know. Maybe that Durant shot doesn't go in if that's here. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be tightly contested series.
So we all roughly feel about the same or marginally just slightly worse.
Mine is probably slighter than yours.
Yeah,
the only thing that concerns me is Wright with such a big X factor, and he just looks so lost in this series. And even being at the games, just seeing Carlisle having to instruct him so much, which probably wasn't caught on TV as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
That happened a lot.
That's troubling.
And that it's just a deer in headlights look for him. But even with that, the turnovers, late game execution, ending quarters, the Mavs needed Kevin Durant, or the Thunder needed Kevin Durant to get a good shot off. And you have Dirk miss a wide-open three-point basket and a fadeaway baseline jumper.
That bounced on the rim three times before it fell. And bounced in such a way that Marion was right there for the putback but couldn't get it because it was such an odd multiple bounce.
You can't time that.
Yeah, he was right there on his pogo stick like he always is for the putback and got nothing out of it. So
even with that, I'm not that concerned because it's just what it is. It's been two flips of a coin and you've landed tails and you've called heads. That's basically what it's been.
One other thought. Last year's team just found a way to win the games in the most critical points. You know, at the end of the game, you know, all the tight games seem to fall the Mavs' way. And, you know, this year, going back to all of the last-second shots and in this series, it's not going the Mavs' way. I really want to believe that they can get this done, but this year's squad, I just don't feel can get it done.
You feel as though there's like a cloud hanging over this season when it comes to getting the break. And a lot of people say that you're not going to get those breaks when you've given all your karma to the last ring, which may be the case. One thing I don't think any of us have had any problem with has been the performance of the great Dirk. You mentioned that he missed a couple shots that he normally makes, but so what?
Yeah, those go down.
I'll take it 100 times. Brian took the liberty of pulling some Dirk audio, Dirk-related audio.
Oh, I was like, where are you going?
Scramble mode.
That just goes to show how whatever the opposite of finger on the pulse, this particular opinionator is when it comes to the NBA, and he's going to play us some of that now.
This came from yesterday, from Colin Cowherd, The Herd, on ESPN Radio. Yep, that's Tim. we're going to do this kind of like how we did the Jazz audio from last episode, where we'll play until we feel a point where it's necessary to stop and chime
until Tim raises his hand and says, time out.
Yeah, pretty much. So let's go ahead and get going. He's talking about, this is after game two, and these are his opinions. Is that me?
Late in game.
There it is. Okay, let me go again.
Sorry. It's always my fault.
Okay, let's go.
It has been a series where Dallas has not been efficient late in games. Mr. Clutch Dirk missed a shot last night.
It happens.
But I do think it's funny. Carlisle came out, and, I mean, literally, Rick's one of the nice guys in the NBA, and he was ripping the refs, and he said, Oklahoma City's dirty, and the refs aren't calling it. Here's Rick Carlisle.
We don't like the cheap shots when they give them, and they don't like them. That's the nature of competition. Hey, I love hard-played, clean, competitive playoff series. And you throw the ball up and may the best team win. You know, the dirty bull's got to stop.
Okay. First of all, it's playoff basketball. I believe Carlisle is so adamant because his star player is more of a finesse player, and that Dirk Nowitzki, the word out in the game on Dirk has always been push him around. He's not a physical player. He's a European. And they basically teach in the academies in Europe from a very early age, they want everybody facing the basket. You know, Europe doesn't give us back-to-the-basket guys anymore. They want their guys, you know, Pau Gasol can be kind of a finesse big. Now, they've got very good hands, very good feet, but their 6'11 guys are not our 6'11 guys. They're not tough and physical like Tyson Chandler. They're not. That's what we produce. We produce Shaq. We produce LeBron. We produce Ben Wallace. We produce D. Wade. We produce Kobe. Tough, physical stars.
6'10", Kevin Durant.
They produce.
Is he tough? Rashard Lewis, is he tough?
He's rich.
Hell yeah, he's rich. Mm-hmm. Look, you...
I hate this guy.
This is the oldest, tiredest, most wilted argument, straw man, that I've ever heard. And how can we keep bringing this up? Dirk gets beat on as much as anybody. How much of a back to the basket game does Kevin Garnett have? How much of a back to the basket game does Kevin Garnett really have? Oh, but he's tough. He's tough because of perception. He's tough because of media and his big, fat mouth. Tough is so overrated in the game of basketball. Real tough is never addressed by national media. It's even inaccurately addressed quite often by local media. We're lucky here because a lot of our guys are very pro-Mavs. You know, you look at guys like Bob Sturm, Ben and Skin. Those guys are in love with the Mavs, and rightfully so, and do a bang-up job with a good, objective, you know, viewpoint. But generally, sports media has it all wrong when it comes to toughness in basketball. And as far as what Rick Carlisle's doing, did or did not Phil Jackson win 42 rings by in part not only by coaching the best player in the league usually, but also by doing a really good job of working the refs?
Manipulation.
Yeah, I mean, the rules are the rules. Playoff series do go this way. I think Carlisle's right, and I also think that he's right when he says that he expects physical play. But rules are rules. Things will happen, and the coaches are going to make comments to see if the refs start to emphasize things. We all know Dirk gets killed on a lot of offensive plays and doesn't always get the call. He gets less superstar treatment than any superstar in the history of NBA superstars. So there's that.
Well said.
But if this has to devolve into yet another discussion of toughness, because Kendrick Perkins is allowed to show off his pulling guard technique, then that's not basketball anymore. I said it on Twitter in the play that led to the Serge Ibaka and one late in game one. Kendrick Perkins set a high screen on Sean Marion, which caused him to switch off Durant, which caused the whole rotation that left Ibaka open. Perkins had him engaged for like 9 seconds. He had him engaged on this moving screen for a long time. I'm telling you, if you were, as an offensive lineman, able to engage your guy for that long, you're in the Pro Bowl every year. I mean, you have so done your job.
Here's what I want to do. I want to take someone, casual sports fan in, let's say, like the state of Wyoming, who has no bias, and I want them to watch highlight reels of Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Dirk Nowitzki, and I want to see who gets the calls. I want to have them make that decision.
Somebody,
I mean?
Somebody who's never watched NBA basketball.
Another MVP, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or any kind of media that leads you to believe that someone is tougher than someone else because of the way they look.
An NBA MVP reigning world champion get treated like that. Come on.
Gasol and Dirk Nowitzki, and those are very good players. They're very good players. But I think that's the reason that Carlisle's going out. He's sort of protecting his guy, Dirk Nowitzki. I thought last year the media was ridiculous, and I don't blame Dallas fans. It's a great franchise. They were starving for a championship. I never blame a fan for being cuckoo. And Maverick fans were like, Nowitzki's better than Larry Bird.
False.
No, he's not. Nowitzki's better. Larry Bird's considered one of the top 8-9 players ever. Nowitzki's not in the top 15.
Has anybody ever? Have you ever had anybody?
He's better than LeBron. No, he.
Have you ever had anybody say Dirk was better than Bird? Have you ever met anybody who said that?
No.
Mm-mm. Never. Not once. Not never.
In your many travels across many, many Mav fandoms, I've never heard anyone say that. Nor have I heard anyone say he's better than LeBron. I definitely heard him say he was better than LeBron in the fourth quarter of last year's playoffs, and that was true. But that was last year's playoffs.
LeBron is a multiple MVP winner. LeBron's one of the best distributors and rebounders in league history for his size. Come on. And by the way, LeBron's got another 6 peak years and probably another 10 to go in the league. LeBron's going to get titles. So, but it's interesting. Last year, just to show you how the media and fans can be such prisoners of the moment, Dirk Nowitzki's resume was littered with first-round exits in the playoffs, second-round exits, often as a number one seed. If Dirk Nowitzki gets bounced in the first...
Say that...
Often. So one time is often?
This guy's a joke,
man. So one time is often. So if you do something once, it's often, which is being the number one seed. to be littered with first and second round exits. Okay, when did they lose in the first round? 04, an 07, an 08, and 10. 4, 7, 8, and 10, so four times. That is pretty littered. However, in each time, except for 07, they lost to a better team. And 08 and 10, they were in down years those years, man.
I'm with you, man.
The second round exits are nothing to sneeze at. In 01, you lost to the Spurs, who were right on the cusp of beating the Lakers that year.
Mm-hmm.
In 02, you lost to the Kings, who were some bad whistles away from going to the finals. In 03, you went to the Western Conference Finals, lost to the champs. In 05, you lost to the juggernaut Phoenix. You weren't going to beat Phoenix. Only someone with the stones of the Spurs were going to beat Phoenix. You weren't grown up enough to beat Phoenix with the little
they couldn't handle
with
Phoenix.
Rookie Devin Harris and right. Jet, and that was a whatever. In 07, you total debacle. You can criticize 07
sure.
all you want.
Sure.
08, pretty much a debacle because of the everybody gave up on Avery. You can criticize that all you want. And then in 2010, you lost to the Spurs. That was a pretty much a debacle too. So there's been some debacles. I don't blame him for that. But to say you often lost as a one in the first round as a one seed is just obviously ludicrous, because it's impossible for the first seed to lose often and also be the only first seed to ever lose in the first round to number eight.
I mean, if you rely on this guy for your sports information, you just need to.
Does he have anything else for us that we
nothing.
Need?
Nothing. This guy has nothing. A bag of nothing.
Probably not. He talks about.
What do you think, man? We're over here just ranting, but you're staying quiet eating Skittles.
Because Skittles are good.
What do you think, buddy?
Y'all are pretty much saying it for
me. He got them from Lamar.
No.
He raided his locker room before he left.
No, that was empty already. He's just a big bag of hot air with his information, but I think it's convenient when he talks about rings to where it kind of defines your legacy, but when it comes to Dirk, he won't. He only has one ring.
Yeah, everybody else is all about, well, at least I got a ring, and yet Dirk is exempt from that.
Right.
So it's typical national media BS. These guys play to the majority. They play to wherever the wind's blowing at the given time. And obviously we know this guy has LeBron's balls in his mouth. He has for years.
Awkward.
And he has no... I wish that he and Jim Rome would somehow get in...
Skip, too.
Just both of them would just... Yeah. Just and Skip,
of course. Stephen A.
Everybody. And Skip and Stephen A. And who else we got?
Rick Renner?
No, he's just a local.
Why the hate
local,
on
local,
Rick Renner?
Local doofuses
Dude,
are allowed
come
to be doofuses.
On.
Quit hating on Rick Brennan.
He likes LaMadeline.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with LaMadeline. Well, anyway, don't listen to that guy when it gets to be noon in the DF dub.
I take a nap.
Go elsewhere.
When it's
go
noon,
elsewhere.
Noon
anywhere
is,
but there.
Anywhere but there. Anywhere but there, please. So, what are we going to do next, Brian?
We're going to recap. We've started to do so already, but we're going to recap the first two games, dig a little bit deeper on those, and see what we think happened in those first two games. So that's up after the break. Mavericks Outsider Report.
Word.
Like a scientist, you want to rhyme? You got to sign my list, because I'm a manifest and bless the mic I hold. You want an X?
First of all, I would have told you last week there was nothing that could have made me like Colin Cowherd's show any less than I currently already do. But the fact that he's now, it's also the platform of choice for David Stern. Perfect. Of course it is. Of course it is. You know, I want to know, in the media business, you've heard of the term lead-in. You know, for example, if you watch a show at 7, it may work as a lead-in for the show at 7:30 in that you're still there and you're going to watch the 7:30 show. Whatever the opposite of that is, that's what Colin Cowherd is. I try when I'm able to, at work, I try to listen to Ben and Skin until 12. And I'm telling you, if I get up from my desk and I'm doing something and I come back and I hear Cowherd, I flip out.
It's a herd.
I'm like, where's Bob and Dan? Where's Bob and Dan? Where are they? I mean, I completely flip out. It is the exact opposite of a lead. I'm sitting there waiting for their final segment to end with my finger on the X.
just waiting to click. Okay, winter bed and skin done. And as soon as they're done, I'm clicking. If I hear one syllable of Cowherd, I'm out.
That was well timed. Why does it seem like my thing? There it is. Okay. Well timed pull on the Cowherd rant.
I saved my Cowherd rant because I just felt like it was a good rant.
And it was going to be needed again in the future.
You knew that at some point you would need to rant about the guy because he's so ridiculous.
That was the first time I heard. Earlier this afternoon was the first time I actually heard the rant because it was blowing up my timeline yesterday. When this was going on between 12 and 2. I don't remember what I was doing, but I obviously wasn't listening to that. but my timeline was blowing up, so I had to get some help and say what happened. So I listened. It was interesting.
Foolish. I don't understand why people who decide what to put on the radio sometimes make the decisions they make, because I feel as though I represent their target demographic very well and can listen to sports radio sometimes in excess of 8 hours a day, which reminds me I have a camp out I need to be rolling tape on here pretty soon.
Tomorrow night, right?
The musicians are going out tonight.
So late night
I
ticket?
Need to roll on that. Theater? Yeah. So anyway, long story short, I don't understand. I mean, we know what people listen to. Who listens to that dipshit?
Wow.
And why?
Sheep.
Yeah,
that's who.
But it's so abrasive. I don't understand. Anyway, that's not why we're here. Thank goodness to talk about that fool. We're here to talk about the Mavericks, and I would rather talk about the Mavericks being down 0-25 than talk about that fool. So the Mavericks
that would be hard.
Are down. Yeah, you're not going to come back from that.
No.
Pull up your basketball prospectus and run the numbers on that one.
It's 0%.
Mavs are down. They're in an 0-2 hole. Coming back to Dallas here for Game 3 tomorrow night, which is Thursday, May 3rd. So we want to talk about what happened in those first two games. Very close games, both of them. First one being
Saturday
night.
I remember this.
Good.
I remember it was Saturday.
Very good. Mavericks lost 99-98 on the famous elbow fadeaway, rainbow, six bounce and in from Kevin Durant. Gut punch, game winner.
Kidney punch?
Kidney punch, gut
donkey punch,
punch. Donkey punch.
Yeah.
Nut punch.
I would deal with all of those punches.
It's very descriptive. Asterisk punch.
The first thing I took away from the game was Jason Terry was just on fire.
Especially early.
Yeah, he started 4-4 in the quarter. I think he started 8 of 9. I'm not 100% sure on that.
He did. Or at least 7 of 8.
Yeah, but he was absolutely on fire. A trend that has pretty much carried out the rest of the way into the other game as well was Russell Westbrook was hot as well.
That dude's good, man.
He's better than I don't know if it's a byproduct of Kevin Durant being taken out or if it's just he's naturally this good, but Westbrook is better than I thought he was.
Got an HSO on him on him and
oh. It's just the way you said that.
On him and Harden, but we
pardon
can
save, me.
We can,
I have an HSO.
We can save that for a little bit later.
Say it now.
If it's good, if it's contextual.
I think Harden is a better facilitator for Oklahoma City and their offense than Russell Westbrook.
I agree.
I bet there's a lot of people that would be willing to make that case, and I'm probably one of them.
He was outstanding facilitating for them in game two, but
that's what
anyhow.
Harden is good. Harden has.
He's a baller, dude.
Yeah.
Lefty, right?
I hate him, but he's a baller.
He's a lefty, and you know what? He has graduated for me from I hate him to I hate him so much that I actually like him because if he was on my team, I would love him. I think that's where I am with him now. It's his beard and his Asperger's wannabe bit that do still bother me. All these guys with beards. I talked about this last week when you were out, Tim. All these SOBs in their beards.
Baron Davis.
Well, no.
Don't we have beards?
Yeah, we do.
We have
got
beards.
Some strong
we got
beards
right now, right?
We got some strong right. beards right
let's
now.
Let's tread lightly because we're rocking
you're
beards
you're not balling
right now.
On the court like them.
I mean,
oh, yeah, we don't have bumblebee
I mean,
beards.
I basically mean he and Brian Wilson. They both have
sure.
their beard, and they both look – like they're so when they talk to you, they're glad or talk to the media, they're just glassy eyed and just Asperger's. They act like they have Asperger's, both of them, and it's because it's just this bit that they do because they both consider themselves cerebral on a non athlete level, mm-hmm. a la CJ Wilson.
Right?
Imagine if CJ wasn't a Valley girl, he might act like that. But anyway, Valley, notice I said Valley girl,
He's a man, though.
But he's a Valley Girl. Okay. So, anyway, I'm with you on him, dude. And what you're saying, Brian, you know, they did a pretty good job of limiting Durant last year in the series. Mm-hmm. I think that Westbrook has gotten a little bit better at knowing when to not take over, but when to come more to the forefront as that's happening. He seems to be more capable of, I guess, emphasizing his own scoring and picking his spots. Whereas I felt like last year when we watched him, he was very much
either
hero ball or defer ball. He didn't really have that middle ground. Now, I still think he's capable of doing both. He's definitely capable of hero ball. I think he's demonstrated it some this year anyway. But at least in these first two games, he's done a lot better job of riding the line between the two extremes. And as a result, that's made him significantly more effective, and you notice it a lot more as Kevin Durant is limited by the great defense of Sean Marion. I mean, Durant, 10 of 27, that's a 37% shooting percentage, including 1 of 6 from 3. He only got to the line 5 times. I mean, that's huge.
But you need that, and the Thunder needed Westbrook as badly as they got him because
right.
Durant was not a factor. It was kind of a concern early from Dallas's standpoint that Dirk was so cold to start. I believe he was 1 of 6 to start, but it kind of reminded me of game 6 in Miami because Dirk just did not have it going. Shots were pretty good. They just weren't going in, but then Jason Terry was doing his own thing. But luckily for everyone involved that he got his act together.
He did, and he went through this stretch in the third quarter and into the fourth where he wasn't really getting the ball a lot. He was on the bench for a little chunk of time there, I think longer than what we would have anticipated in a playoff game. But once he came back and starting with about, I don't know, 8 minutes or so in the fourth, he really started getting to the line. He made some shots. What was his final tally for the fourth, 11 points? It was double figures, right, wasn't it?
11.
Yeah.
3 of 5 from the field, 5 of 5 from the line.
Very much a Dirk playoff performance. If you get 10 and a quarter, you're obviously balling out. So he ended up doing fine. But there was a period there where I felt like he passed up before he started to do that. He passed up a couple shots. There was one where the Mavericks were kind of trying to build on the lead, and he got the ball to Marion kind of in a secondary break off on the wing, and that's just like the worst situation and the worst player to put in that situation for Dirk to get rid of the ball. It's like if you can't go right to the basket, pull it back out and reset. It was just odd and weird, and I felt like he was kind of taking himself out of the game somewhat by not being aggressive enough, but he offset those with – he had 10 trips to the line. I swear 8 of them were in that fourth quarter.
5.
Was it 5?
Yeah.
It felt like 8.
The thing that was puzzling at the end for Dirk were the turnovers. It wasn't even great defense. To me, it just seemed like his body was positioned to leave himself exposed for a good clean swipe at the ball.
Well, and I think he was getting put into positions where he had to do a lot more what I would call open field dribbling.
Yeah.
You know, more towards the middle of the floor, pushed out further. Things that we've talked about in the past make him less comfortable. And when they make him less comfortable, he's more apt to have that happen. He's more predictable. When you're less comfortable, you're more predictable. When you're more predictable, that means that second defender can come across and try to poke the ball out or whatever. And the way that they were letting Kendrick Perkins push on him, he didn't have much choice. He had to basically take it wherever they got him the ball. And it was definitely not to his advantage, the areas that he got it. And I also noticed there were so many times last year. I mean, obviously we know Dirk works on that sort of elbow and then down kind of area, you know, down off the wing, but all the time. But last year there were a lot of instances where he would get the ball at the top of the key and everybody would clear out and he would just operate. They were more effective this year at sending a second guy in sort of an unpredictable fashion so that when he was going to a spin or putting the ball on the floor, he was a lot easier to get the strip than before. And I don't know how much of that had to do with Perkins being allowed to push on him, like I said. But whereas before, last year, he had that Jedi operation from the top of the key that seemed very methodical, very thought out, very just like so not predictable, but just so like ingrained in what he was trying to do. And this year he seems more uncertain. And I feel like it's because OKC is sending guys not always at the same time and from the same direction as they did last year. The double teams I felt were more predictable last year. And he was able to react like he just, you know, lickety split.
What do you think about Marion from three?
I think, how do you waste that?
Yeah.
How do you waste that? What was his final? 3 of 5.
3 of 5 from three. 7 of 14 from the field. 17.8 rebounds.
I hate that you wasted a game where you had a hot jet.
Wasted is a good.
You had a hot jet, term. Which a hot jet is liable to happen again in this series. More
it
often,
is
more
it's
often
that
than
hot.
Not
he was
the
hot
playoffs.
The whole time. Usually, a jet gets hot he for like has, a quarter or
right.
a half. You know what I mean?
First quarter and fourth quarter.
He was lethal.
Whatever. Yeah. To waste that, and then to 3 of 5 from Sean Marion, 17 points from Sean Marion, 3 of 5 from three, I should say.
With the defensive effort.
And then, yeah, and what he was doing for Durant. And then on top of that, you had Kidd with 7 steals. To have all that happen in one game, and Dirk carries you 11 points in the fourth quarter, 10 trips to the line on the night. Ugh, you just hate to see that happen and not come away with a win. That was what killed me more than anything. The 7-point lead with 2-something left. Honestly, even though you're so right, Tim, that last year's team would not have lost that lead, last year's team knew how to close out close games. The fact of the matter is, 7 with 2.5 in the NBA ain't
nothing.
It's
not impossible.
I really feel like a little too much has been made of that. Even in the context of the Mavs and the fact that they can't hold a damn lead this year, late in the game, or can't pull out a close game like they normally can. 7-point lead against any team in the NBA is not safe with 2.5 left. It's damn sure not safe against the 2 seed
like
in the
them.
Western Conference.
Yeah, they're too explosive.
A little too much has been made of that. I agree that it's unfortunate. They should have closed it out. They had every opportunity. It was mostly self-inflicted gunshot wounds. But at the end of the day, a little too much has been made of that.
I had a question for both of you. I would argue that the Mavericks gave OKC, this Maverick team gave OKC in Game 1 their best shot.
Pretty close
and
to
aside
it.
Aside from, let's say, the home game that they gave San Antonio, I don't see how they could probably give OKC a better shot than they gave in Game 1 and they came up on the losing end. Can you see them? Can you envision, other than, like I said, a San Antonio game, them giving a better shot to OKC?
I see a few ways where they could give a better shot.
Overall, I mean, you know,
as
I mean?
An overall team effort,
like from a Marion and from a Kidd and from a Jet and from a Dirk, you know
right.
what I mean?
The reason they can is because Jet can do what he did again. He may not be so that hot for that concentrated period of time, but as far as an overall performance of 20 points, 5 assists and an efficient shooting night, he can do that and he'll probably do it tomorrow. Dirk obviously is Dirk. Marion's going to do everything you ask of him. He's just not going to do 17-8. He might do 11-8. But there's areas here where we know the team can be better. Delonte West, 2 of 5, 5 points, 2 assists, 1 steal. Vince Carter.
Before you go on, that was the first game where we were in doubt of if
right.
Delonte was actually going to play
sure,
or not.
So, sure.
And so he performed better in Game 2. So
you have a sick. You had a sick Delonte who was iffy. Carter didn't shoot well. He 13 points on 5 of 14. And then, obviously, the centers didn't show up.
Right.
So if you basically get what you expect out of Dirk Kidd, Marion, and Terry, although you won't get the scoring, the crazy scoring from Marion or the crazy assist or steal numbers from Kidd, but you'll get good performances from them. Not great, but good. If your bench scorers and your centers show up a little bit, then you can throw a little bit better punch. But marginally, it's only going to be a little bit better punch than what this is because those crazy performances you got from the guys you mentioned helped to offset
exactly.
a little bit.
Exactly.
So this is damn close. I think there's ways to do it, and there's a slightly different way to add up X, Y, and Z to get to this result, but it's pretty damn close to one of their most complete games.
I would agree with that stance because there are things you can fix, and probably the two likeliest ones are West and the centers.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see with Haywood. The way I see it is that he'll set the table defensively, maybe 5 minutes to start the first quarter and the third quarter, but after that, they've got to go with Mahimi for the most part, see if Wright can do anything, and then if not, go small ball. After that, which was effective in Game 2. But one more thing I wanted to ask for Game 1. did y'all have a problem with how it played out defensively on the last play? Would you have rather just double Durant right away and force someone else to beat you?
Not with the way that not with the way that Marion played Durant all game. I have no problem with that final play.
I'm fine with that shot. I was more of like a little shot put shot, and after it hit the first bounce off the rim, I didn't think it was going in, and then that second bounce kind of bounced backward toward the net, and
perfect
I was like,
spin.
Holy
yeah.
S.
Perfect,
you know?
Spin on it. You had the guy who may well be the most complete offensive basketball player alive making an incredibly
Brian
difficult
Cardinal?
Shot. Yeah, you know, I mean, he's right in there with Cardinal. Durant making an incredibly difficult shot with a second and a half left on the clock. You got everything. Yeah. You got beat by an awesome, awesome, awesome basketball player making an incredibly difficult shot, because that's what guys do.
Right.
I agreed with the skin wades of the world who were bristling at people bitching about it being a lucky shot. Sure, it's a lucky shot, but awesome players make lucky shots all the time. Look at Dirk, lives off of it. Dirk makes some hard shots. So yeah, I don't have a problem if he doubles Durant there, and Durant probably doesn't give it up anyway. That's the only thing that kind of makes me wonder. You remember the numbers that we ran last week, or got from somewhere online? Someone tweeted them that Durant had the most field goal attempts in crunch time, under 3 minutes and under a 3-point margin, one way or the other, and had zero assists and 66 field goal attempts. So looking at that kind of makes you wonder, well, it would have been interesting to see what happened. But in all honesty, you know, who are you going to send? You're probably going to send Kidd. Who's Kidd going to leave? Somebody you don't want to leave.
Either Harden
Westbrook
or
Hart.
Yeah.
So I given what Marion's capable of doing, and I have the utmost faith in him as a defender.
I'm telling you, go back and look at the shot. It was a shot put-ish shot.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
His left hand wasn't even on the ball. His right hand was extended
above his
head.
Yeah, it was a weird
push almost. Yeah, I agree. Kind of a almost a floater, a floater arm action, except from about 17 feet.
And kind of falling away to the side. It was
incredible.
Going to game two on Monday, it was a 102-99 victory for the Thunder. Again, another close game. I think the bigger thing to take away from this game was the physicality early, like in the first 7-8
minutes. I love
minutes.
That it got Dirk fired up. I love Piss Dirk. Piss Dirk.
What about Piss Carlisle?
Piss Dirk and Piss Carlisle are my two favorite human beings on Earth.
You saw Carlisle go out
normally,
on the court.
Tim and I both would tell you that Ron Washington is number one, but I would venture to say that Piss Dirk and Piss Carlisle,
the trifecta right
when
there.
When they become that pissed person, there's no comparison.
Carlisle was out on the floor. He almost looked like he had to be held back. He was doing the come at me, bro, with Perkins. He was not scared at all.
Well played.
I love the fact that Rick, he will. Remember when he told Baron Davis to go get some lunch?
Yeah.
I just love that he's not afraid to back down. He'll fight you like an SOB if he has to. I just like that.
But, yeah, it was, like we talked about earlier, it was incredibly physical. You got that swipe at Dirk's face after a shot where you'll go for the block if it's great. If you don't get it, you're still going to get something at the end of it with a swipe at the face. And that Dirk got pissed. Give a little elbow, and that got it all riled up. And looks like nothing's going to come of it, because we haven't heard anything from the league in terms of any kind of fines or suspensions or anything.
Yeah, the swings, if you will, between Dirk and Perkins, to me, were not full-on punch throwings. So leave it be. It's a couple of dudes that, honestly, neither one's going to actually fight anybody. They're just pissed off. So that's fine. And as far as the Ibaka hand to the face of Dirk, that's just a missed foul call. Those happen all the time. So I understand why they were upset, and it was worth reemphasizing on Rick's part, despite what Colin Cowherd might think. Later on in that game, especially in that third quarter, it kind of paid off.
I agree.
But I like the way pissed off Dirk kind of, you know, saddled up, put the team on his back. They got into a hole that, honestly, I was a little bit afraid that they were going to fold up shop, and they didn't. And they fought back and ended up obviously taking a 1-point lead a handful of times. So even though I hate the fact that they fell behind, I still hate the fact that the centers aren't playing. Vince Carter did nothing. Jason Kidd couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Mahimi was better in this
game. Mahimi was a little better, more aggressive around the basket. But you had another great game from Marion, another great game from Dirk. Terry had trouble getting opportunities, but when he got them, he was fairly efficient. They are taking the Greg Popovich approach of
swarm.
Of swarm Jason Terry and beat the Mavericks. Right. And that's the case because they have still, to this point, you look at what the Spurs did to the Mavs in the – or what did they did to Jason Terry in the 09 and 10 playoffs. They're taking that, and it was the demise of the Mavs in 2010 and could have been in 09 if not for Josh Howard still being around and having his last decent appearance as an NBA player. They're taking that blueprint and applying it, and the Mavericks haven't exactly reloaded with efficient offensive firepower to be able to counteract it. They got a lot of other pieces that are versatile and can do some other things, that can defend, that can rebound, that can move the ball, you know, or whatever, but there's nobody there other than Jet who you can think, I'm going to get him the ball, and they're going to go get me 20 tonight pretty much no matter what. He's the only one. Vince is not at that level anymore. He's too old now, so... Mm-hmm.
That's their blueprint now, is to try to find not guys that can get them 20, but can get them 12 to 15 and hopefully get 4 or 5
right. of
those
Right, they're
guys.
Trying to do the balance and down the bench kind of a thing. And I guess, you know, that and the fact that so many good looks just didn't fall for Kidd. We can talk about the looks that didn't fall for Dirk, but there were just a couple. Right. Dirk ended up 10 for 19. He makes the two shots we expect him to make that everybody's heartbroken over.
Game's over.
He's 12 for 19.
I'm not mad at him. I'm heartbroken is the perfect word because those went in last year.
Sure. But my point is that he's 12 for 19 if he does that, which is extraordinary.
Sure.
As it is, he had a great game. The killer was over the balance of that second half. Jason Kidd had 4 wide open threes.
Yes.
And all the Mavs,
great looks.
All the Mavs need was one of them to go. If one of them
rattled
goes,
the rim a couple times,
yeah.
man.
Pretty much most of them rattled. Yeah. There was just maybe
needed,
one bad shot out of
them. You just needed one to go. Get one of those Kidd threes to go, and pretty much everything else probably starts to take shape more in the way you want it. Just simple as that.
What happened to Brendan Haywood? I mean, he was...
almost 10.
This series...
What's wrong with him?
I don't know if I said this last time, but...
Nothing.
This series is more available for the three centers to play, but this series still isn't a great series for him to play in. It's just that it's too up and down. I mean, Perkins or Ibaka, it doesn't matter who it is. If it's Perkins, he's not going to be that affected because they don't go to Perkins that much. If it's Ibaka, Ibaka can go out to 18 feet and take him out of his element. It's just not a good series, but that doesn't take away from the fact
that his play, I'm talking about the quality of his play. I mean, they fed him the rock twice down there, and he had Eric Dampier hands, and then we actually was able to get a shot off. It didn't even hit the backboard or the rim.
Well, the biggest thing is he didn't collect a single rebound in this game. So that's if you're not going to – I understand not scoring, but if you're not even going to rebound – there's not that much point for you to be out on the floor.
I'm going
to
save my thoughts for a subsequent segment a little down the road, which we said we're going to talk about just general revelations from these two games.
I jumped the gun a little
bit. I'm compartmentalizing my center play, but what you said about Perkins, I'm going to remember that.
Because you're going to throw it back in my face.
Yeah, I guess. What else besides center play from game two do you have issue with? Like I said, Carter was pretty awful. Kidd was pretty awful. I mean,
one of the things.
But other than that, nobody else was that bad. It's just,
and they were right there. Like you're saying, we were right there.
I'm sure if I say this, you're going to be able to go off on something. But when the Mavs went in the penalty in the third quarter, that's when they started to take jump
balls.
Shots, jumpers.
Not at first.
No,
you know, for the first probably 4 minutes of game time, they stuck with it. But you're right. There came a point about midway through that 8 minutes of penalty, where all of a sudden, man, three-pointers just started being the, you know, the mode of choice. And I don't understand how you can continually fall back on that when you know you're in the penalty. I don't know. I guess it's just so different being in the flow of the game and you're so conditioned to take what the defense gives you to a certain degree, and that's what they were getting. There weren't a lot of bad looks.
No.
I remember maybe one that Jet took that I was a little iffy with, like a little quick, but it's Jet.
That's
going to do that.
His MO. You have to live with that.
But other than that, I felt like there were a lot of good looks at three. Carter had a couple wide open. Kidd, obviously, we talked about that. Jet had some. Dirk was out of the game at that point. If I'm going to argue with anything, you got to rest the guy sometime. He's not going to play 48, but resting him when you're in getting the penalty so early, when he's the only person you have outside of the very, very orchestrated Vince Carter post-up, he's the only guy you have that you can throw it into and expect to get a trip to the line. So I would not have preferred to see him sit during that stretch. I think you have to try to find a way to manage that a little differently. So, but the threes were ultimately a killer. The Mavericks were able in this game to again limit Kevin Durant 5 of 17 from the field, which is even worse than his previous game in terms of percentage. Westbrook went off again, roughly the same as last game, 28 points in game one, 29 points in game two. Serge Ibaka was limited to nothing.
He went from 22 points to 2 points.
But who found their nut? Derek Fisher found his nut in that second quarter where everything started going to crap. He just started bawling. He ended up 5 of 6 from the field, 11 points, 3 rebounds. It pretty much all took place during that second quarter.
It was 6 points in the period, 3 of 4 from the field.
And that ended up being, you know...
And Harden, too, because I feel like Harden was more of a factor in Game 2 than he was Game 1.
Yeah, but you expect that.
He was a factor from the free throw line. Only 2 of 7 from the field and only 1 of 3 from 3, but he got into that mode.
He was always getting to the rack.
He got into that mode of... shoulder down, head down, and as soon as somebody touches me, I'm going to have a full body spasm and go to the line. And the Mavericks don't have an answer for it because they have to pay so much attention to Westbrook. They don't have the perimeter defense that they need.
It's screen and rolls defense has been a big problem for them.
Which is so funny because last year they did it very well, but they had a big man.
They had a general down there.
They had a big man who
communicating.
Who had some of the best lateral movement you're going to see from a big man and communication.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that makes we'll have to go to that probably for the next segment. So that pretty much covers the first two games of the series. It was frustrating,
heartbreaking,
piss
breaking, agonizing.
That too. Keep going.
You already said it.
I said piss breaking.
Piss breaking. Is that what we're about to do?
No. I don't. I'm good. So are we doing stories or revelations next? Whichever.
Which would you think would work better in the flow of the show, executive
like
producer?
Quoting the Bible?
I don't care. We've been talking about the games.
Let's
a
do
lot.
Stories, then we'll go to okay. Revelations.
We're going to talk about some stories from the road.
Talk about it might be revelations for the Mavs coming up here pretty soon. We're going to talk about things ending an ending chapter. We're getting there.
So we're going to talk about some stories from the road after the break. After some Jigga, Mavericks Outsider Report, Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. This is what you. You said it's not for commercial usage.
Little JDO head there for you.
Real quick, have you seen the
usage?
Have you seen the picture that's floating around on the internet? Or it's some?
Yes,
some,
I've seen that one.
Some guy and his girlfriend or wife or whatever at the some ball game. They're at the concession stand and he's wearing a jersey on the back. It says 99.
Oh
problems,
yeah, I've seen that one.
And then she has the number 1 and it says ain't one above it. It's awesome.
Because she's a bitch.
That's funny.
That's funny.
Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 58, right here for you, closing up on the end of the first hour, talking basketball. We've been getting deep into the first games of OKC Mavs series here in the first round, and we will be again shortly. But first, our embedded reporter, Brian Gutierrez, is going to share some stories from the road with us. Spent some time with the team and with the traveling crew from, what, Friday through early Tuesday morning?
Yes. Unfortunately, very early Tuesday.
Yeah.
Morning.
What time did you get home?
Home on Tuesday, we landed at 2:25, which was way later than it should have been.
Were y'all delayed?
Yes, and we will get into that.
Okay.
First part, deep down in the bottom of my belly, I was hoping that the Mavs would play the Lakers because I'd much rather
go. Never know how Booty Hose is going to act.
Not the same. It wasn't deep down there.
It wasn't that far deep?
No, we stopped at the belly.
Okay.
I was hoping that it'd be the Lakers for a much funner trip.
Just to be able to, I understand.
But I've been to LA before.
Sure.
But the alternative was okay, too. It was a 45-minute flight.
Sounded like a brag there.
Yeah, okay. I've been there.
Oh, okay.
Bro, I've been there before. Hey, you're the one that was in Hawaii for like
Isn't that the guy that either does or did a Mavericks blog?
Exactly. I wasn't the one in Hawaii for a couple months, basically.
Sorry, guys.
Six days equals 2 months.
Going to Hawaii for April. See you later.
See ya.
Some weird math.
So why are you going to Hawaii? What's the occasion? April.
It's that month. It's my favorite month, so we go to Hawaii. it's fun being on the plane because everyone just mingles around until it's time to go. Rick Carlisle's walking around. You see him as a normal person, which is weird and stuff like that. But I had one of my books for him, and I gave it to him. He's like, "You wrote a book?" And I was like, "Yep."
Was he jacking with you?
No, he was looking at it. He was looking at it, and then he saw the cover, and he's like, "You wrote this, right?" Yep.
And he had no idea you were writing a book or anything?
No.
Okay.
And he's like, "This looks good." And then he took it and just took it to his seat, basically. I don't know if Delonte had the oysters before the flight or whatever.
Did he have the big Popeyes that he tweeted?
That was on the plane.
I thought that was on the plane. Yeah. I love that guy. He and I are so right with each other on food. He's over there. He's taking pictures of his fried chicken and his crunch berries and talking about going to Wendy's and getting a Frosty. I'm like, this guy is my brother. If he would tweet about Whataburger, I'd be saying, let's go get a DNA test.
I'm sure he probably
I think I know where your blue eyes came from, homie.
He's thought about it before, probably. But that's how it is on the plane. When you walk on, you go to the right for us, and they go a little to the left. But once you go to the left, there's these huge boxes of Popeye's chicken.
I love it.
Josh is full of chicken.
Josh Beckett and Terry Francona could not pull that off. Delonte,
they could not.
So I'm guessing the oysters were before that point. But
yeah.
Quick flight to OKC where there is Wi-Fi now on the plane. There wasn't last year, but you have to get to 10,000 feet, and you're probably only up to 10,000 feet for about 5 seconds.
It's like flying to Austin. Yeah. By the time you pull your phone out, or not your phone, your computer out, you have to put it back up.
Yeah, so that wasn't very fun. Got to the hotel, the infamous Skirvin Hotel. No haunting going on or anything like that. After game one, apparently this was a story I heard secondhand from Folliwell because he was in the hotel at the time. Apparently, after the game, Mark Cuban and some of the Mavs entourage, if you will, that was on the plane, went to the bar in the hotel lobby just to commiserate, basically, after the game.
Just to drown sorrows.
Yeah. And afterwards, the highlights were coming up on the TV in the bar, and there were still some fans still in the bar, and they're being heckling in a playful nature. But I think one of them went a little too far.
You mean the OKC Tim?
Probably. Not cursing or anything, but just like
pumping. I wish I would have been there.
I know you do.
Just pumping his
chest. Hey, man, I think I know what we're doing on. When's the next game in OKC? Next Monday?
Probably.
I think I know what we're doing next Monday.
Just trolling.
Lobby bar at the Skirvin. Yeah. Whiskey time.
He was just pumping his chest a little bit, and it was good nature, but Cuban had a little bit of enough of that, and then fans were coming up and apologizing and stuff like that. But the other fan wanted to as well, but Cuban was like, that's enough.
Yeah, let's just end it here.
Yeah. So that was going on there. And then the next day was an off day, and we ended up playing basketball. It was me, Ben Rogers, Folliwell, parts of the production crew, and a surprise cameo appearance from Derek Harper. So that was very interesting. It was at some church about 20 minutes away from the hotel, and everyone was excited to see Derek Harper out on the floor, just to see him on the floor playing. And I remember one time we got switched on defense where I had to guard Harper.
Good luck with that.
And he was going to the block, and he is so damn smart. He grabs your hip, holds on to it, and swings in front to seal you off. And he'll hold on to your hand the whole time. Like, he's using his right hand to seal you, left hand up, grabs it, lays it in. And I was like, good thing that was not a tearaway.
And he's 50 years old, and he probably dominated everybody to a level that was completely impossible to comprehend.
He was good.
That stuff never leaves you, man.
This is the level of talent is so different. It's incomprehensible. The difference between a guy like Brian who plays basketball 3 or 4 times a week, which is more than most adults do, you're in the 99.9th percentile of time devoted to basketball for an adult, and yet, you know, this guy is 200 times better than you are still
for
at
sure.
age 50 compared to age 29.
For sure.
So that's just crazy. And you know, this is not just some guy who played for the Mavericks. This is a guy for whom hand-checking rules were changed. This guy changed the NBA rule book. His skill of being able to direct a ball handler without fouling him direct him with contact above the waist without fouling him, which was tough to do. That led to a rule change in like 95 or 96 when the new hand-checking rules came out. Yeah. So that's something to be said. And did I hear right that Skin wimped out of that game? I didn't hear his name.
He was there. Oh, I forgot. Okay. He was there. He was there.
I was going to say, that's going to come up later if he was like, oh, Harp's going, I'm out.
Ben and Skin just know how to play on the floor together. They have all this back history together where they don't have to say anything. They can just look at each other a certain way, and they just know how to operate. But Followell, man, he is a hybrid of Rondo and Dennis Rodman, where you don't have to score.
What just happened?
You don't score, but you are a major factor on the floor, where you're either passing the ball. It's not like behind the back stuff. He's just a good facilitator, but he will jack you up with his body. He will run into you hard and just forearm shiver you or whatever. He's sending.
If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Pretty much.
What was that?
He was just such a physical
if
beast.
If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Yeah. But he's intense. He will run for. Okay, let's say Ben is going for a rebound on the right block. Followell is going to be on the left elbow extended, and the ball's already up in the air. He's going off of his guy, running, screaming, and going at Ben.
Like screaming audibly?
Yes.
That's just funny.
He's doing that, and he will push him. He will literally push you away.
Well, that's because he runs like 82 miles a day, so that helps.
His cardio is great.
That's where I completely fall down in the game of basketball is stamina. So,
only
basketball, though.
But the same thing with Rondo and Rodman is they had issues shooting. So he had his issue shooting, and he's like, man, I wish I could play basketball more because it's fun and I could learn how to shoot and stuff like that. So that was a fun experience with the basketball. After game two, we were ready to go. The way it sets up, there are two buses at the arena where the first bus that leaves the arena to go to the airport are all the guys that leave pretty much right away, like Dominique Jones. The lower minute guys are the guys that just shower and change real quickly, and the production team. So they head to the airport. They're probably waiting a good 20 to 25 minutes after the second bus, which are your bigger minute guys, and then the guys that have to talk on the podium, so Carlisle and Dirk on this night. So Dirk finishes up. We follow behind him to the bus, and we see that it's raining. And we had no idea that it was raining at the time, so there's a lot of lightning and everything going on. So we head to the airport, which is probably about 10 minutes away, and you can just see all this lightning going on around us. And we go to the private terminal, and they're saying that they had to cover up the jet. They had to put it in a hangar because there was threat of hail. So this was going on for another 10 to 15 minutes, and I texted Rylan and Followell, because Followell was in the other bus, and I think Keith Grant was saying they moved the steps away from the plane for us to board the plane because we wouldn't fly. And I could hear Carlisle in the front of the bus saying, they're a bunch of pussies. Once Keith said that they moved the steps away so we weren't able to get on the plane, he said they're a bunch of pussies.
Did you know, last year the plane got hit with hail, I guess, right, while it was just here, I guess.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they were a little more, we don't want to have to go through that crap again, as opposed to maybe if it hadn't happened last year, they might have been willing to be a little more cavalier. So that was what caused the team to get in so late,
right,
Monday night, a.k.a. Tuesday morning.
Right.
Was Tuesday a scheduled off day?
Yes,
anyway, so it really didn't throw anybody's – other than just needing extra sleep, it didn't really throw anybody's schedule
off. For sure,
off,
yeah.
So that's good that it didn't affect any kind of, you know, organized activity that they – I'm sure that was all for today, basically. Yeah. So
what I learned is Keith Grant, who's the assistant GM, is basically the chaperone on the road. He keeps track of everything and will direct traffic. So he was – during this time, he was in direct contact with the airport trying to figure out what was going on, and he said that we might have to just consider driving back
This is when Delonte once again became my brother. He tweeted while y'all are all waiting. He tweeted something to the effect of, Hey, it's only a few hours, man. Let's just go to the drive-thru, get 27 bacon cheeseburgers, and hit the road.
Yeah.
So this man loves drive-thrus.
He does.
I need him to write a book about drive-thrus. That's what I need. I need a Delonte West coffee table book that has lots of pictures and stories about drive-thrus. I'm dead serious.
He probably had.
Nobody else in the world may want this, but I want one.
Probably some. You probably won't be the only one. But the thing was, they were considering driving, but the biggest issue was that there would be a lack of food because there was a lot of food waiting for them on the plane.
Sure.
And there were four fans, surprisingly, waiting for the team.
I feel really bad for those four sad
fans. Four. That's dedication, Holmes.
Four.
Dedication.
At 2:30 in the morning. That was the road for Oklahoma City.
That's just, Bachelor would say that's tough.
That is tough.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Well, hopefully there will be more opportunity for travel in the very near future for you and your embedded status here with the Mavericks Outsider Report.
Should there be a Game 5? You going back? Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome.
If they keep going, I keep going.
Awesome.
That's how we need it to be, then. We need you to keep going. This podcast is going to keep going, too, after this break. We're going to get back to more serious endeavors, namely, what are our biggest revelations following these first two games in Oklahoma City, and what does that mean looking forward? And, of course, there'll be Nuggets coming up next and later on the Mavericks Outside Report.
Oh, linked up with the end of the song.
Didn't even mean to do that. Hey, let's talk basketball.
One more time. One more story. Sorry.
Go.
Holger reads all the time. If it's not basketball, he's reading.
He's a Renaissance man. He's learned.
And he wears the same thing.
The same black leather jacket?
Black leather jacket, plaid shirt, jeans. That's it. The same thing.
There's something to be said about older dudes that once they hit about 50... just have almost like a uniform.
They tap out. That's the same.
There's something to be said for that. There's a fine art to that. That dude, when you meet that dude, he is that dude. And it's like, you know that guy.
You know it.
And he is like, this is who I am. I've got it all on lockdown. I've got this figured out. Don't try to persuade me on anything. I have my shit laid out. I know what's up. It's kind of like what I think of trying to convince my dad of anything.
Right.
It's not going to happen. If he has an opinion on it, that opinion is so deeply formed that there is 0.0 chance of possibly changing.
You're not changing it. You're not.
There's no way.
He was pretty much the same way the entire trip, except for the actual beginning of the trip before we flew, because there's something going on with Nike and Dirk that's going on, and Steve Chevera, who does all the web stuff for the Mavericks, showed the video of what's going on to all of us in the back of the plane, and he showed it to Holger, and his eyes just lit up seeing this video, and it's going to be something cool that's going on probably during the summertime, probably in June, so keep an eye out on that.
Real quick before we move on.
Delonte tweets,
damn, it's raining hail out here. Our plane's not even here. It's only a two-hour drive. It's longer than that, but
it is.
I get his gist. He says, I say we grab 27 junior bacon cheeseburgers and Lego.
Lego!
And then about a minute later, he says, and a Frosty. Matter of fact, grab me 10 nuggets. Ha, that sound actually sounds good right about now.
Delonte.
I'm telling you, I'm all about a Frosty, too. So that's your combo guard right there, ladies and gentlemen.
You know what we need to do? I've seen this on another radio show where you probably have to make an audio program or something that will write or say what you type, and you have to put these in here. Put his tweets in there and make it say, Delonte said this. And it has to be just in a funny voice, and we can have a segment called Delonte's Tweets. That's just something to think of for the future, even though there's...
Damn, it's raining hail out here.
Pretty much. Give me another Delonte tweet, computer.
Damn, it's raining hail out here.
How long is the flight? don't know.
Oh.
It's not about the flight.
Oh, it's not? This is live producing at its maximum right now, where we're coming up with a new segment with Delonte tweets. Can't you copy and paste it?
Easier to do.
Oh. I would copy and paste, but he loves to type. I'm having my Skittles.
That's why it's 7 games. We only played 8 quarters out of possible 28. Hold up, did I do that right? Yeah, we all right. Long game.
I love it. Let's do this after the next commercial, because we can probably have a ton of ammo. So we're going to go with the revelations of, not the Mavericks, but of what we've learned.
In true to this, ya dig, free my lil bra.
So this explains where the cowboy computer comes from. Revelations, where are we going?
Yes, we're going to talk about the biggest things we learned after the first...
I'm sorry I stole the idea from the big black cowboy's computer.
First two games.
Sorry, Gordon Keith.
That's okay, computer. First two games, revelations that we've maybe touched on or we'll touch on a little bit more or stuff we haven't touched on yet.
Number one for me, and I already told y'all what it is, so we might as well lead with it, center play. And it's a negative revelation, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't think we could have foreseen this, and it bothers me on a number of levels, obviously because of the effect on the court. You know, the Mavs have to rebound well to have a chance, and when you're not getting what you need from your big men, that immediately puts you behind the eight ball when it comes to rebounding. Because, you know, our guys, that's... holding down the fort on defense and rebounding are the two things we ask them to do. We don't ask them to be incredible weak side shot blockers. We don't ask them to be big scoring centers. That's just all they need to do. Play your role in the team D concept, whatever needs to be asked of you against that particular game, particular scheme, and get boards.
But hasn't that been a deficiency of the Mavericks all season, though, is rebounding?
No, well, only later.
Yeah.
Remember, early in the year, we were all raving about how well the centers were doing by committee. Excuse me. Remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, we had several instances here where we said, hey, sure, we would rather have Tyson Chandler if money wasn't an object, but we're not missing him all that much. And defensively, the Mavs team numbers didn't take much of a slip from last year. Generally, this has been a pretty successful defensive team in terms of points per possession. I think it's been timing and, you know, an epidemic of poor rebounding numbers over the last 6 weeks of the season or so, probably, maybe give or take. I mean, that's an unscientific swag. But I don't think we foresaw that in the second game of a series, Brendan Haywood was going to play 10 minutes and have no boards. You know, that is crazy to me. And I understand what Brian was saying about how he's not out there trying to take care of a LaMarcus Aldridge or a Blake Griffin. But if he can do that, he damn sure ought to be able to keep Kendrick Perkins off the boards. And it's not like Perkins is a big rebounder, but when you play 10 minutes and have zero boards, and Perkins plays 26 minutes and has six boards, then you didn't do your job.
I agree.
You didn't. I'm not saying you have to hold Perkins to a 1 million stat line. I'm not saying that. But it's just there's not as nearly as much asked of him. They don't have a dynamic run and gun big man. When they use Perkins, he's as traditional a big man as you have in this league, mm-hmm. one of several. So I just don't understand why the sudden drop off from Haywood. Mahinmi has given me more or less what I expect, which is some flashes of good play, some flashes of poor play, some foul trouble, some aggressiveness around the rim, and some fart and fall down around the rim. I mean, he's been who he is, pretty much. And that's okay as long as Brendan Haywood is consistent, and he hasn't been. So that makes us demand more of Jan Mahinmi, which he's not really up to, and then that makes the bonus time you get out of Brandon Wright even more critical. And like you said earlier, he just hasn't been able to get his head right.
Yeah.
Let's hope that he can come out of it. Let's hope that it's mental and getting back home and getting the butterflies out or whatever, that he figures something out. But at this point, the whole idea of that position being so deficient is a big stick-in-my-craw thing. And I just it's unfortunate because I didn't expect him to be world beaters, but I expected a heck of a lot more than this.
And I think the thing that I completely forgot about going into this series was that this would be the first time that Wright would actually be in the playoffs. You don't even think about it, but obviously Golden State wasn't in the playoffs at the time. I don't even think New Jersey was. Even if I thought of New Jersey, I would have thought maybe they could have been a fringe playoff team, but probably not.
It's weird to me, though, because it's not like he's a baby.
Right.
He's a younger guy, but he's not a baby, and he's been a very level-headed contributor all year. There's nothing about...
Just throw water on him, and he's good.
Yeah, there's nothing about the way he's carried himself that has made me be worried to say, well, you know, he might have some playoff jitters. That's the Roddy thing for me, and even I think Roddy has kind of, we talked about it last week, some of the ways he's shown some maturity, even if his production hasn't been consistent, the way he handled the thing with his dad, the way he handled the dislocated finger and coming back and playing 38 minutes, all those things, to me, kind of said, well, you know, whatever Roddy does or doesn't do are going to be a product more of his ability to play good, strong mental basketball and not some, you know, junior butterfly issue. And I've felt the same way about Brandon Wright all year. He's gone into any game, any situation they've asked him to, and he's got numbers and he's produced and he's been a positive impact on the court almost every time. So it's shocking. Like, it really is.
The thing for me, which I talked about earlier, was just Westbrook. I had an idea of him before as a player, but he is much more well-rounded than I thought he was. He's able to get to point A to point B, obviously, and he can shoot from outside, but his mid-range game is a lot better than what I thought it would be. But the thing of it is that it's predicated off of the defense that he's going up against, where they're so protective of not allowing these guys to get to the rim to where they build their walls, which is what you want to do, but they're laying off. The perimeter guys are laying off. And that's in man, but when you're in zone, he's able to get wherever he wants, and it's usually 13 to 15 feet away from the basket, and he has a clean shot at the basket to where there's no one really in front of him, and he just has clean looks and clean releases. So the adjustment that they want to make is that still make him be a jump shooter, but they need the shots to be more contested. So that's what you have to see what happens after that, but his skills as a mid-range jump shooter are impressive.
Yeah.
Let's see. My revelation, and to Ryland's point, is I don't think Haywood has a future with this team.
Right. That's a good, great, dude. I was thinking the exact same thing, and I forgot it. Do you guys think this means
amnesty? Right.
Do you guys think this pretty much says
absolutely? This has
when
to be
we needed
it.
You the most, you weren't there.
This has to be it. I'm all for beefing up. Right. You know. Not roids, obviously, but get him in the gym, pound the iron, you know, beef him up, feed him some protein, whatever you got to do, and you
have
know,
him hang with Delonte for a little while.
I mean, I'm shocked. Yeah, do what you need to do. Eat some fried chicken. Do what you have to do with some hot sauce, whatever you need to do. You know, let's get beefier, get stronger, get more physical. I mean, what you did for the Mavericks this year was beyond any expectation for me, anyway. So that was the first thing, and then the second thing is, I just think the Mavs can't hang with OKC. I mean, OKC can, it seems to have any answer for their shot.
Punch, counterpunch.
This team reminds me of the Texas Rangers. Like, I feel like the Texas Rangers can beat you, you know, 1 through 9 in the lineup. You know, you can try to contain Kevin Durant and boom, who steps up, you know, who finds the nut for them. You know, Westbrook is going to, you know, 28, 25 or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, Harden, he went bananas the other night. Even Carlson was pitching in.
Fisher,
Ibaka. I just don't think the Mavs got it. I really hope that they prove me wrong, but maybe a little bit of the torch passing, I guess.
On Haywood, real quick, and we'll save an in-depth talk on that for whenever we convene. You know, after the season, we'll have some draft / free agent shows to work through. But it's, I felt this, my gut reaction was the same, was that how can you not, given that he's the guy you have the longest contract with right now on the books, how can you not take advantage of being able to wipe that clean? But I think it's all going to come down to what else is available,
right?
Either by trade or in free agency, because despite this turd that he's laid in these first two games, he is, by NBA standards, a very solid true center. And he, at $8 million, is
great value.
Worth what he's getting paid. Sadly, the market on centers is screwed up.
I hear what you're saying, but when I actually just watch the games from my eyes,
time
and time and time again, I'm left underwhelmed and frustrated and like, why? I'd rather see his minutes go to, you know, essentially anywhere else. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of a hot sports opinion, you know, but I'd rather see, you know, Mahinmi. I was impressed with his development this year. I'd like to see him, you know, do what he needs to do to get more physical and take that next step. Like I said, beef up Brandon Wright. I just can't take Haywood. Haywood to me is Dampier Jr. You know what I mean?
Certainly has, like, been these last 2 years.
Killing
games.
Me, kicking me in the balls, man.
One other little revelation that I have, which is that the debacle of Lamar Odom really put the Mavs behind the eight ball offensively. The fact that they were able to acquire him when they did, which was early enough that they still had time to potentially make other moves if they were out there, set them up with an Odom, and then with a bench basically of Odom, West, backup center du jour, and Vince Carter.
And Terry.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, you know, he's a major contributor.
Right.
He's a 30-plus
You're talking about your second tiers.
Your second tier guys. So that, for Vince Carter and what he's been this year, that's a perfect slot for him. But there is no more Lamar Odom in front of him shouldering a load, and there never was. So this has forced Vince Carter into more minutes in more roles, and he's not able to just do what I think we wanted him to do, which was kind of float and find his places to pick his spots and hit, knock down open shots and make timely baskets, but not be asked to do too much. He's been a good player with a good attitude. He's done a lot more on defense than I think any of us knew he was capable of doing or had the disposition to fulfill. But the absence of an offensively talented bench player beyond Jason Terry, who's able to score at a rapid clip in bursts, not to take away from what Delonte's able to do, but that's not his game. That's not his brand, you know. Has forced Carter up, and it's hurt the fact that the Mavs, it's one of the reasons why the Mavs go through these stretches where they just can't score.
I agree. I can agree with that. You're at that point, you're asking, like you said, you're asking Vince to do more, you're asking Delonte to do more and do stuff that's not necessarily in his realm, even though it's stuff he can do. So it does put a little mishmash into the flow, if you, for lack of a better term, but it is what it is, and they just have to find an answer for it. In terms of surprising revelations to me, the last one is that this team, Oklahoma City, is deeper than I thought they were, especially compared to last year, based off the fact where you were saying that it was just Harden, Durant, and Westbrook. Now you're finding random pieces that are able to fit in. And it might be a surprise, but they're randomly doing it over the course of the season.
Well, and guys like Serge Ibaka have
rounded the
games out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I got one more quick one. Delonte West can ball, man.
Yeah, he can.
He can play with this club.
He can play
with the Mavericks. They don't miss J.J. Barea in this playoffs thus far
at all. Oh, I disagree with that.
I would disagree with that, too.
You don't think so?
They miss his penetrating.
They miss his ability to change a game offensively. They don't have anybody they can throw from the bench onto the court and get hot and score 10 points in half a quarter.
But in terms of intangibles and other things like that,
the impact on the game?
He impacts the game in a similar way to JJ.
He can ball, man. He can play for me.
Similar, but different.
I think it's a shame that he's played well enough that the Mavericks probably are not going to be able to fit him into their plans next year, assuming their plans work out. Because if their plans work out, they're going to need a different kind of help in the guard spot than what he can bring.
But if the plans don't work,
then I think he's somebody you look at to help supplement.
He's on the cheap this year, right, for the Mavericks?
Super cheap.
Minimum.
Yeah. Frosty cheap.
All righty. Well, that's your revelations. Coming up next, after a quick break, NBA Nuggets, Mavericks Outsider Report.
Tom Petty.
Just so you know, we're in all black to every playoff game. Same suit. Different draws.
featuring the greatest band in the world, Morse Data Time.
Damn, it's raining hell out here. Our plane not even here. It's only 2-hour drive. I say we grab 27 bacon cheeseburgers and Lego. Dot dot and a frosty. Matter of fact, grab me 10 nuggets. Haha. That actually sound good right about now.
Oh, Delonte.
And with that, Mavericks Outsider Report, second hour is in full swing. Episode 58 from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Delonte tweets as read by Mac OS X. Doesn't get much better.
That's a staple now. It doesn't matter if he's here or not. That's a staple.
That's, yeah. So, NBA Nuggets, like I said, that's the segment you have found. It's a segment where we like to look around what's going on at the league, see who's making news, why they're making news, when they made news, and for what reason they made news, and then talk about it and give it some analyses through our Mav-colored glasses. Playoff edition. Things have gotten a lot more relevant now. So, with that, first nugget.
Oh, weak. There we go. Oh. We have two regular season nuggets we need to jump into. The first one that came to a head during the playoffs was Paul Silas is now out as the Charlotte Bobcats coach. Shocking nobody. But the bigger news is that the Charlotte Bobcats were historically terrible.
They're bad. They're bad. They're bad.
They were 7-59, and that recorded the worst winning percentage in league history at .106. .106.
So they could have been.
I think they needed, if they played out the string for an 82 game season,
they could have only won one more game.
One more to take the record. Yeah.
Yeah.
But didn't they lose 20 in a row?
They had some ridiculous streaks.
So who's to say that they would have even won another game, right?
Right. So, I mean, that's true.
So bad.
That's so bad. So Paul Silas is out on the street.
Hey, they shouldn't even have a team.
I mean, when you're running out Matt Carroll for heavy minutes, I mean, come on, man.
Should not.
What's Jordan doing? What's he doing? Is he losing his credibility owning this? Ownership stake?
Didn't we have this discussion before?
We had like a nugget where he was a yes man or whatever, what's he doing, man?
I don't think he can ever ruin his reputation because he's Michael Jordan.
Tarnish, maybe ruin's the strong word.
Or even tarnish, but with the astute basketball and or sports fans such as ourselves and our highly intelligent audience, I do think there's a little bit of taking a shine off there. I mean, I'm still going to buy shoes.
Oh, yeah. But what's he doing, man?
Hey, Brian.
What's that?
I know why 36 and 30 happened. I know why 0-2 happened.
What's that?
Give me my hat.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, and then that happens.
Now I have to burn it and get a whole new one, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Haven't been doing the second hour hat move all season.
Bring it in the clutch.
All right.
In the Nuggets.
Now it's time. Even though you
rally drop, time,
I think it's okay.
It was 5 seconds.
Yep. Next nugget.
Last regular season nugget. JJ called out the Wolves.
He did. I saw that.
He called out the Wolves.
I heard about that.
This was after the 12th loss in 13 games. He said, "Quote: We've got problems here. We just got a lot of guys that don't care. When a basketball team's got a bunch of players that don't care, it's tough to win games. It's going to happen until we get players in that care about winning, care about the team, care about the fans." We talked about that there's a who cares attitude in the locker room. They just come in here after the game like nothing happened. That's what happens to a losing team. There's a bunch of us, too, that care and play hard, but there's a bunch that don't care, and we've got to change that.
Good for him. I mean, that's why they brought him in, right? One of the
reasons.
He's
a champion.
He's a champ.
He's considered a veteran guy on that team.
Well, I mean, he's a vet. This is what, his seventh year, sixth year?
Yeah.
So he's enough of a vet for my taste. He'd be a baby on this Mavs team, but that's part of the issue we have with the roster. So
he's just a baby.
He's just a baby. So good for him. I would love to speculate on exactly who he was talking about and who he wasn't, but I'm sure that the disposition of that team went in the crapper as soon as Rubio hurt his knee. I mean, how could it not? I applaud him for taking the stand, but on one hand, I want to kind of say, well, why didn't you do it a couple weeks ago? Right. Why'd you wait until the season was over?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. He got the support of his coach, though, by saying that. He liked Perea stepping up in that aspect.
I like him stepping up, too.
Yeah, accountability.
The little porker.
Yeah, him, too.
Next nugget.
What's the next? We're going playoff mode now.
The Clippers' epic comeback in Memphis.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I missed at least 6 minutes of this comeback. I missed it.
I missed how many minutes was the comeback?
It was probably the fourth quarter.
They were down 20.
I missed the entire.
They were down 24 with 8 minutes left, and I was on my deathbed, and I happened to look up. I was, and they were within 12, and I can't remember the time, and I remember thinking to myself, the Clippers are going to win this game, and I passed out. You know, I couldn't keep my eyes open anymore, and sure enough,
tweet
I woke
me.
Up. Yeah. That's just pretty much what I said. Tweet me the final score.
In the shot clock era, the Clippers come back from down 21 ties the largest in playoff history, going back to 2002 with the Celtics.
You remember when the Celtics did that to the Nets? Remember, I was at my parents' house watching that with my dad, and we were both just completely shocked at what went down. Remember, Paul Pierce got in everybody's face and like was yelling at him to have some pride and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was...
Yeah, now we can sweep that Portland Mavs game 400.
Yep. Yeah, that's a little
bit... Forgot about that.
They were down 24 with 8 minutes to go. And then they made 8 more field goals, including 4 more three-pointers, and grabbed 13 rebounds in the Grizzlies during that stretch.
Boy, what happened to the Grizzlies, man? Call a timeout. Do something.
What I remember from the game is that they were too... They played damn well in the first part of that game. Everything was going well for them.
Well, I was watching the scores because every game that day except for Boston Atlanta was just a crapper.
Right.
And the other two games were 15 plus point margins, Spurs game and the Lakers game. And so then I was watching that game thinking the Rangers were over. I was like, I might flip over to that, but it was a blowout. So I was like, man, screw this. And I was gonna, you know, bitch about how the Western Conference games all sucked or whatever. And then all of a sudden they started coming back, and I just was, you know, by that point I was already doing my bit, so I wasn't watching it. But
that's crazy. Okay, yeah, I thought there was something necessary coming. So yeah, epic comeback. I wonder how Memphis responds.
You think this? Yeah, I was about to say. You think this is a deflating, demoralizing loss where they won't be able to bounce back?
It easily could.
They don't have the veteran figurehead. You know, they're a very starless team, if you will. I mean, granted, Zebo is Zebo and Gasol is Gasol, and they have Rudy Gay is Rudy Gay, but nobody has an established sort of I am your fearless leader.
Tony Allen?
Look about them. Yeah, definitely. So, you know what I'm saying? So I question, you know, I wonder what's really going to happen there. And also, I don't think they're as good as everybody thought they were. I just think they're deep.
Yeah.
And so when people see that they're deep and they don't have any glaring holes, and because they have a big man who can be really good, I think people are apt to assign a little bit more value to that team than maybe they warranted, because Randolph's nowhere near the level he was at last year. I mean, last year he was balling so hard in that MCL.
He had that injury, though, right?
MCL at the beginning of this year that threw everything out of whack for him. And he was hitting those cheeseburgers with
Devontae.
They
did something, though, to vault to four. Didn't they vault to the four seed? I didn't realize
they
did
just
that.
Pretty, no, they stayed at five.
Yeah.
But they were just pretty steady all year, though.
Yeah.
Wait. No, they're at four, aren't they? They have
Memphis?
The home court. They have the home court.
That's true.
Oh, they did?
They are.
Yeah, they have
they
the home court.
They stole it on the last night.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was all within one or
right,
two games.
Right.
Yeah.
Next nugget. ACL Armageddon.
Dang, this sucks.
I called it, dude. I hate it.
I saw it, and I've seen too many of them. I've seen too many knees go out like that to know. And like I said, I wasn't an MRI machine or whatever, but I knew it. And the way he couldn't put any pressure on. He needed two guys to carry him off the court.
You're talking about Shumpert, right?
I'm talking about Rose.
Rose happened to Shumpert too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I thought the main figure is Rose here. But man,
both of them were non-contact. The thing with Rose is that he's been hurt all year long, and the way that his body, the way he plays the game, his body's just not prepared to just go, let's go. His body needs that time to rest, but this season didn't allow that because he was always hurt. And
it's a shame, man.
It was on a plant, too. He just plant, jump, and the knee gave out right away on the plant. It was terrible.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. This paves the easy route, in my opinion, for the Heat to get to the finals.
Yeah, I hate it.
To the
Absolutely
finals.
Hate what it does to the Eastern Conference now. Yeah. They were your only true hope.
Right.
I mean, you know, maybe Boston can Dallas the Heat the way Dallas the Heat last year, but that's a very, very slim chance that seems slimmer and slimmer by the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Heat are better than they were, and it's depressing, dude. And I hate it because Derrick Rose is a good young player. He's a player that I personally like to watch play.
He's a good dude for the league, man.
I don't mind their team. I like their coach. You know, I like most of their guys on their team, and I just hate to see something like that happen. Shumpert, I don't have much of an opinion on, but it just speaks to, like Brian was saying, this season of weirdness and this season of people's bodies getting out of whack, and it just, I guess...
You think it's more than a coincidence? You think the season has...
I think it has to an extent, but for him specifically, it messed him
up. Yeah, I don't know about Shumpert, but for him, yeah, I think it had to have some effect on the strength of his leg, which led for... It probably, if it happened this way, like you said, a non-contact injury like that, it probably was going to happen eventually, but it probably accelerated it.
It just
seems to me, and I'm no orthopedist.
It was a buckle for sure. I've seen worse buckles, but it was definitely a buckle.
He just puts too much torque on his body. He reminds me of Tiger Woods in that aspect where he's just careless to what his body does. He's just going to do it no matter what's happening.
Next nugget. Rondo. Rondo and chest bump.
Yeah, he...
Chest bump gate.
He chest bump gate the official... This was in the last minute of the game, I believe, against Atlanta.
Yeah, this was like 40 seconds or something left.
41 seconds remaining in the 83-74 loss for Boston, where there was a scramble between Garnett and someone else, and Garnett was obviously sweating heavily at the time. But
was he scowling as well? No, scowling and sweating?
He might have been. It was hard to see on the film.
What a punt. Go home.
But the jump ball was not called. It was just called for a timeout, I believe. And Rondo was pissed.
There definitely was no jump ball. Brandon Bass actually fouled whoever that was that had the ball.
Right.
The guy just must have called a timeout before the foul happened. I mean, he had the ball cradled in his gut, and Bass just jumped on his back.
Right.
I mean, look, I'm all about raging against the man and anti-establishment when it's warranted. But there was nothing there. However, Bill Simmons, of course, posted a link to a YouTube video from earlier in the year in a game against Atlanta that showed this particular ref making like 10 calls in a row in the fourth quarter and overtime of a game against the Celtics, calling fouls. He was back at half court calling fouls Bennett Salvatore style from 35 feet away repeatedly. Now, it was edited, so it made it look like it was very rapid succession. Who's to say exactly how many possessions occurred in between each one? But it was pretty bad. So I think this, even though obviously Rondo pushed it too far, Rondo intended to make contact with him, and it was a dumb play to get mad about to begin with because it was the right call. There was obviously some pretext to this that caused all this to brew, a lot like every time that bald ref gets mad at Dirk
Crawford.
The tall
oh,
slaw
yeah.
or what did sloth. Not sloth. What did Cuban call him at the Knicks game when I sat down there and I heard Cuban call him a name? Dang, what did he call him?
I don't hear.
I don't remember.
It was some kind of like Adams Family or Munsters reference or something.
No.
I'm
drawing a blank on it.
Uncle right? Fester?
No.
Lurch?
Lurch, yeah. Thank Lurch. You, Courtney. Yeah, she was there. He called him Lurch.
Oh, Lurch.
Yeah. Nice. But you know how that guy, every time he and Dirk have some kind of dust up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember. I know who you're talking about now.
This cat is Rondo's Lurch. The only thing is you cannot make contact with the ref.
Yeah,
come
man.
On, dude.
He just loses
that's
his head.
Stupid.
He's
ultra, that's stupid.
No. That is the basketball.
That's stupid.
That is the NBA equivalent of like hitting a girl. Like, you can't, you just can't do it. There is no way it can possibly, no matter what you think was construed, it cannot
especially in
possibly,
the postseason, man.
Right.
Every game's so
horrible.
Important, man.
Horrible. Thank you.
Guess we're going to the next nugget.
Yeah. Andrew Bynum is becoming a man.
Bawling his ass off.
That's
pisses
pretty,
me off.
That's pretty much all we need to say on that. He's just dominating against the Nuggets, and it's unfortunate for the rest of the league.
Is it unfortunate, though, for the Heat? I hope it is.
I would think it would have to be.
What makes you think they're getting past the Spurs?
That's going to be, if that happens, if they play each other, I will love to watch that series.
What if they play OKC?
No, they can beat OKC.
I'll tell you this. The Western Conference.
What if they play the Mavericks?
The Western Conference Finals will be the last series I watch because I don't think I can watch the Heat. And if they play the Lakers, like I said on Twitter, I'm just going to be hoping.
What if it's the Spurs?
For a natural disaster or civil unrest.
Would you root for the Spurs at that point?
No, blow up the NBA.
Yeah,
just explode the NBA.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping for a natural disaster or civil unrest to the degree that the finals are canceled and there will be no champions.
The Civil War all breaks out.
Dallas Mavericks carryover champions from 2012.
Represent.
We'll go to awards now.
All right, go.
Is this Nugget too?
Yes. You want to? Let's go with Greg Popovich. He won the Coach of the Year award.
100% deserved.
77 votes, first place votes.
He is the best scrub extractor of anyone I've ever seen.
It's amazing. It is amazing.
Rick Carlisle did not get a vote, I believe, for Coach of the Year. So that's kind of interesting in that aspect. Who got second? Who do you think got second?
Thibodeau?
Yeah, I was going to say Thibodeau.
Who got third? This is your boy. This is Ryland's boy.
I have a lot of
Collins?
Boys.
No.
Hey, man, he got the 76ers in the
Indiana's, what's his face?
You don't even know his name.
No, I do, but I can't think of it now. Dang
his
it.
Mom doesn't even know his name.
Oh, what is his name?
Indiana Pacers head coach?
Yeah.
Oh, hell. Tell me.
Frank Vogel.
Vogel, yes.
He got third place.
Okay,
wow,
sure.
Good for him.
Very impressive.
Where was Collins on that? I think you got to give him a lot of credit for what Philadelphia's done.
Yeah, man.
He...
Right?
No. No. It was Popovich.
You don't got to give him credit?
No, he did not get credit. Popovich, Thibodeau, Vogel, Lionel Hollins, Rivers, Brooks, Corbin, Carl Brown, Van Gundy, Drew, Larry Drew, Monty Williams, Vinny Del Negro, Kevin McHale, Alvin Gentry.
Del Negro?
So a guy who lost his club.
The only
got
ones,
a vote, but
honestly,
Collins didn't.
The only ones there that I'm down with are McHale and Corbin.
Corbin. Yeah.
To me, both of those guys.
Rivers?
Both of those guys. Okay. Yeah. I'll give Doc. Okay. Doc, McHale, and Ty Corbin. Those are the three guys that I look at their team and I say, they really got more than I personally expected they were going to get out of them.
What about Brown? All things considered.
No.
But you love his nastiness, though. His saltiness.
I love his saltiness, especially against Ron Artest back when we were talking about that.
Right, yeah.
I gained a little respect for him through that, but no, it's a. You can't be Coach of the Year with that with Kobe and those bigs. It's too easy. Next award?
Yes.
Oh.
Tyson Chandler wins Defensive Player of the Year, but the biggest surprise to me was Sean Marion being eighth.
This is a media.
You've just blown my mind, dude.
He was ranked eighth.
This is a media-driven award that is slowly approaching the ridiculous rank of the Gold Glove in terms of irrelevance due to the inability of the media to properly evaluate. Not to say that Chandler's not an impact player defensively. If anybody knows that he is, it's guys like us. But and if you look at what he did statistically for the Knicks as a difference maker,
huge.
Their team defense, it was huge. But for Sean Marion, so the fact that he won, I can't really get riled about that. I mean,
good for him.
Good for him, and we know he's an incredible impact defensive player. But for Sean Marion to get eighth place when he's easily should have been in the top three consideration, I don't think there's any question. If you take Sean Marion off this team, this Mavs team's not in the playoffs. There, I said it.
Chuck Cooperstein put it perfectly last night on Twitter. I don't have his tweet in front of me, but if you dig it up, nothing else needs to be said. End of story. Case closed. Court is adjourned.
Sean Marion's ability to guard the team's best player night in and night out probably was worth five wins to this Mavericks team this year at least, if not more. He probably single-handedly saved them from 40-point outbursts from at least five or six guys, and that alone puts them in the playoffs. If you take that out, they're not in the playoffs.
Was it happy birthday to my homeboy and the one and only custodian, Brian Cardinal? Hope you have a great one, bro. Hashtag rockstar.
No, that's not the one I'm referring
to.
That
was a retweet, actually. Was it, as one who voted for a Defensive Player of the Year vote, I voted Marion, Howard, Tony Allen. I wanted to reward players who have to guard on the floor. Couldn't ignore D12. Was it that one?
Nope.
Oh, well, then I'll have to dig a little bit more.
Here's the side effect, the Mav-colored glasses aspect on this. The play of the closeness of these games against Oklahoma City in the beginning of this series and the abysmal play of the centers made the Tyson Chandler decision the big story again. And everybody's been talking about it. And then this damn thing happens, which makes it an even bigger, easy story. This is it. This is going to... The Tyson Chandler story, unless the Mavericks find a way to overcome this O2 deficit and move on, this Tyson Chandler story is going to suck up all the oxygen that the D-Will story leaves. It's going to be, that's it. And it's all going to be one. Anything about D-Will will be about Tyson. Anything about Tyson will be about D-Will. That's all it's going to be.
Was it Chandler is a great defender,
yes,
but wasn't...
that
any,
one.
Okay, Chandler is a great defender, but wasn't any different than he was with Mavs last year. No one had a better defensive year than at Matrix 31.
Shut it down. Let's go, home.
So...
done.
The, okay, so Marion was 8. The people that were ahead of him, Tyson Chandler, Sir Chewbacca, Dwight Howard, LeBron James, Kevin Garnett, Tony Allen, Andre Iguodala. And Marion was ahead of Luol Deng and Josh Smith.
Garnett,
which I'm surprised
is a joke.
Josh Smith is low on that list.
Garnett is a joke. And look, is, I agree that Serge Ibaka is, was freakish this year, statistics-wise, on blocks. But is he, at this point, a defensive one-trick pony when it comes to those blocks? I mean, what else does he really do all that well?
He's great when people come at him. But when he has to do pick and roll... outside of
things
just,
that require significant technique, he's not there yet. And I'm not saying he's not going to get there.
Right.
I mean, in a couple years, this guy may be, you know, Dennis Rodman without the 19 rebounds a game in terms of being able to defend. I mean, you know how I feel about this guy. Sir Chewbacca is the man.
Let me ask you this.
But then. I don't think he warrants a second place vote in this league just because he's a freakish shot blocker. Did Mark Eaton never get second place? Well, probably because this is an award voted on by idiots.
Let me ask you this. Money's not an issue. Who are you taking? Are you taking Chandler or Ibaka?
TC.
I'm taking Chandler. Size
trumps
all.
No question about
it,
man.
Size trumps all. I'd love to have Ibaka.
The intangibles, the communication, the stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
His
the floor general
lateral
aspect.
Movement to you, like what you were saying.
Ability to adjust it on the pick and roll.
Give me TC, man.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Josh Smith is so low on this list. He seems like a really good defender.
I completely exposed my lack of knowledge on the Atlanta Hawks last week, so if you say it, I agree.
Any problems with LeBron at 4?
Nah, I mean, we all know he can. He's an incredible
defender.
He's
a superstar, I mean.
My main problems are I feel like it's kind of a default vote for Dwight Howard. I think Dwight Howard just suits up and people immediately assign him with this great defensive. And I know statistically he does a lot of things, but he's just... I need more. I need to see more. Obviously, the Garnett vote's ridiculous. And then Iguodala, another guy I don't watch enough to have an opinion.
I was just floored with the fact that Marion was 8.
To me, Marion should have been in the top 3 or 4.
And now, this probably puts things into question because when Carlisle was asked today, he understood that Chandler deserved the award, but now he expected Marion to be in the top 3, which he clearly wasn't, but he also expected Marion to make the first team All-NBA defense. So if this is how it played out,
then he won't.
I'm pretty sure he's not going to make first team.
Travesty, man.
Yeah. So do you think, okay, I've been on the fence on this. Do you think this pisses Marion off or he just rolls it off?
He probably doesn't care.
Yeah, that's what I figured too.
I don't think it's important enough to affect what
he's
does.
He's got his eyes on a bigger
prize,
man.
He's already pissed off about being down 0-2.
Right.
Yeah. We got it or is that it?
That's it.
Boom.
Well, why don't we take a break and then come back and wrap this thing up and talk about the upcoming week ahead.
Let's do it.
Nuggets.
Better have my donuts.
Can we hear that again?
Yeah.
Please? Delonte tweet?
Sorry. I don't do valet. I do Chipotle. I said Chipotle. Baby girl Chipotle.
So rhythmic.
Are you sure it wasn't that happy birthday to my homeboy tweet you were talking about?
Maybe. Maybe so.
Hashtag rockstar? Today's Brian Cardinal's birthday. I should have wore the shirt today. Didn't think about that. That's my bad. All right, so we're back. Mavericks Outsider Report, Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, episode 58, playoff edition. Ryland is hard at work on working on another Delonte tweet. Let's go ahead and preview the next two games. It will start Thursday back at home, American Airlines Center.
Back at home.
You going?
Yes, sir. MOR will be two-thirds in the building.
Parking apparently is going to be a beast.
Yeah, they have decided to close off even more parking for the museum that has taken 9 years to build over there, which I don't understand.
Sometimes it happens.
I'm going to take my kids to that museum one day and say, yeah, this thing was built from 2007 through 2013. I mean, come on. Why does it take 6 years or more?
Logistics, bro.
To build a freaking building.
I've been trying to tell you.
Which is, introduce your issue to our listeners.
There is a logistics issue in this country. I'm just telling you. And extends beyond the mainland. Just letting you know that.
This is a museum for the longest built museum.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah, parking, we're going to try and get down there kind of early, eat and do that. God, it's going to be...
Do it right, man.
And it's a late game,
too. And they've blocked off the exit that makes it easy to get on 35.
Tomorrow night?
Which I don't understand why they need to arbitrarily block off an exit. That seems antithetical to the idea of a parking lot.
That's pro.
The only exit you have leads you back into the melee at the arena.
Right.
On the corner there between the W, the arena, the fan sports bar. don't go there or listen to that. And then the apartments there. That little corner there, it forces everybody through there. It's ridiculous. There is a logistics problem in this country, Tim. People do not
understand. Hop on board, man. I'm telling you.
Interesting tweet.
It is not that hard to pay the cat who's out there trying to sell me a glow stick every night at the end of the game to go unchain that damn exit at the parking lot and then have him close it back up 3 hours later. Or 2 hours later, or whatever. It's ridiculous.
This is something Chris Mannix from SI.com just had a tweet saying, hearing Jason Kidd isn't interested in playing for a vet minimum or small exception. If he doesn't get a mid-level type offer, he'll quit.
Well, we kind of pegged him at mid-level, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we kind of felt like if the D-Will thing, when we were talking about this, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
We felt like if the D-Will with Kidd backing up thing happened, that the Mavs market for him would be around mid-level. We were saying like $4 or $5 million.
Yeah.
So.
It's in the ballpark.
Yeah.
But why tweet that now? I mean.
I don't know.
What relevance is?
Stirring the pot.
I was about to say.
Stirring the pot.
All right. Back to our regularly scheduled program.
So we have a game Thursday, be game three, and then we have game four, which will be Saturday?
Saturday.
6:30.
6:30 Saturday.
That is an early tip, yes. So the Mavericks have to win at least one of these games to make sure they go back to Oklahoma City. They're in an 0-2 hole. No team has ever come back from an 0-3 hole. So it's imperative for them to handle their business at home, which is what they've said needs to happen and what has happened to this point in the series.
Two questions. If they lose tomorrow night, do they win Saturday?
Yes.
Yeah. They will not get swept.
They will not, yeah.
Going down 3-1, will they win this series? If they go down, should they go down 3-1, will they win the series?
It depends on when the one.
Because history says if they go down 3-0, they
If they go down 3-0, they will not win the series.
3-0, of course not.
But if they win this game and then lose Saturday,
right,
it's still possible. I would say it's still possible.
I think they got to take both of these games to have a serious shot just because they seem to have an inability to take control of games in OKC. And so I only want them to have to win one up there. So I would differ on that, but of course there's always a chance. Anything can happen. They will not get swept. The Dirk Mavs have never gotten swept.
Right. What? Okay.
Dirk will not allow it to happen.
What a big notion I've heard today is that someone is due for a blowout win. Does it happen
In this series?
In these next two games?
I don't, man.
It's just.
Didn't the bigger win that Dallas had this year against Oklahoma City
happen
coming home?
187,
yeah.
I think.
And that's considered big.
Not only is it considered big, but it felt bigger than 13.
Right.
I was at that game. It felt bigger than 13.
I only see a blowout in a game I referenced earlier where the Mavs did against the Spurs. But even in that game, that's when Pop called off the dogs, and Burke, you know, is not going to call off the dogs. And like I said earlier, man, OKC just has too much firepower.
Yeah. So I don't. I agree with y'all that I don't think a blowout is coming.
The way the Mavs play right now, and the way they've played most of the year against superior competition, with the exception of a few eggs they laid, generally they were close games. You know, how many like ass handings did they get at the hands of really good teams? I mean, the Spurs did it to them one time.
Yeah.
All the OKC games were close. The Lakers did it to them one time.
Once.
And opening
day.
And then opening day, and that was such a
Denver
discombobulated team.
Denver took them apart the second game,
yeah,
for sure.
But other than that, you know, I mean.
Did you mention the clip show when they came here and destroyed them?
Yeah, there's that. But really, it's just one here, one
top
there.
Top-tier team that, yeah. I forgot the point I was going to say. Man, it was a good question, too. Damn. Tim?
Tweet me.
Okay.
We answer it.
Rylan?
Tweet me.
What was I going to say? Rylan, do you have any points while I try to figure this question out?
Is Roddy B ever going to be a factor? And if he's not...
Oh, that was my revelation. I forgot. He's done.
Yeah.
He's Zach.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
I agree. If he can't participate in this, why?
Yeah, what's the point? I rue the day that they didn't trade that kid for a lottery pick like they were getting offers for a couple seasons ago. I mean, this is just the biggest case of unrealized potential.
Didn't Cuban say that he... Maybe he said it mockingly, but I think... I swear
that
I remember
he was untradeable.
That he wouldn't trade him for Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, well, we talked to, it was in that tier of player that they needed to get back to consider.
I think part of that's
him.
Just Cuban
that
doing
was my revelation, damn it.
I think that's just part of Cuban doing his job and pumping up his guys and kind of being, it's not his job to objectively evaluate his players in the public square. So I didn't really take that too seriously.
Right.
He did say it. Yeah. And you know they were getting offers a couple years ago.
This has to be it, man.
Been a problem.
He can only look good against the Warriors and the Spurs. So if we can play the Warriors and the Spurs every game, then let's keep him. If not, I don't care. Just get him off the books. Open up more space for – because, look, if you land the D-Will situation for 16 or 17 or whatever his near max or max deal is, you got to find somebody else out there for 10 or 9 or 8.5 or something that's going to be a difference maker. And the $2.5 million you owe Roddy B can go a long way to getting you that person.
Sure.
Find a way, Donnie. Find it. Trade him for a second-round pick to somebody with cap space.
You can take that $2.5 and throw it at Delonte or whatever, you know what I mean?
That would probably actually
That'd
work.
Probably get it done.
That would get it done, I would
I
think.
Bet 2.5 to 3 will get it done
Considering
for Delonte
he's
this
making
summer.
About 700 ish.
Unless somebody comes at him with
somebody money whips him.
Yeah, right. They might. They
but
might
throw
still.
Throw him to
but I don't know. I don't know if he's shown enough for that with the injuries and stuff.
It would have to be a bad team to do it. Who says this is a big
sure.
call? I can't think of the question. It was a decent question, too. Oh, well. The Mavs have to win at least.
You suck.
I know, Delonte.
Damn, that's rude, man.
It happens. I mean, I let everyone down. So the Mavericks have to win one of these next two to extend the series. I believe that will definitely happen. I'm not sure if they'll win both, but I'm almost leaning towards that they will.
I know where you'll be because you're a very measured and predictable evaluator of sports situations, but I want to know from you, where will you be if the Mavericks manage to take both of these home games and we're going into Oklahoma City next week 2-2?
Which would be Monday.
Man, that's tough. That is tough. That is very tough. I'll be apprehensive for sure. You know, I'm still optimistic because, like I said, you know, OKC held serve. I love the matchup. But like I was saying, I have a little bit of, you know, fear deep down that this OKC is just a shade bit above the Mavs, you know?
My fear has been, and it's really not well-founded because I think that the character of this team is one that's still very, very elite. And I think they have guys who care very much about making a good showing. I think Dirk, Kidd, Marion, Jet, that core has
Carlo.
And Rick, yeah. And really, and you know, Delonte West and Vince Carter too. Lots of pride. There is lots of pride in that group. So I don't see it happening, but there's been so much. I've been talking about it for the last probably month and a half. There's been so much just discomfort and frustration and general unhappiness with life mentally from this team over the stretch of this year, mm-hmm. and they, if they get to a point where, my only fear is that they get to a point where it seems inevitable that they're not going to be able to make it happen against Oklahoma City, and they just pack it in. I mean, it's like I said, the Mavericks have not been swept out of the playoffs in the Dirk era. These guys have a ton of pride, but this year has been unlike any other in that mental aspect of, you get the vibe from them that they just want the torture to end. And a lot of that, I think, was a product of the regular season, and that's over now.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably won't happen. But I do have a little tiny fear of that.
Yeah, I guess the best way to say it is I would hope for the best and fear the worst.
To go when they go up 2-2?
If
they were to
2-2
go
or
tied 2-2.
Go up there 2-2, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, OKC, I have no doubt, has just had the Mavs like in their target range since the Western Conference Finals. Like, this is the team that I feel like they want to eliminate the most.
The thing with it is that Dallas is, and maybe it's just based off the fact that they're not good enough or whatever, but they're just due. They're due for a quality road win. They're due for some bounces to go their way because it hasn't happened at all yet.
Yeah.
They're just due. So the point is, we saw in Oklahoma City, the role players stepped up better for Oklahoma City in Oklahoma City. So now you would expect to round out as it should be, where the role players for Dallas play better at home. The crowd's going to be ready to play. They're going to be a
crowd's factor. Definitely going to be ready.
They'll
be ready. They'll be there. Carl already called for it.
There's going to be more than four people at the arena, so that's going to be great for them. It's going to be a blue shirt event.
Blue out tomorrow.
Yes. It's going to say all in on the chest.
Mavs all in.
Oh, yeah. They're actually providing shirts.
Yes.
Boy, let me tell you, those Time Is Now shirts, that's like the weekend wardrobe around here because we have so many of them.
That was every home game, right?
I could mow in a different one every week.
Yeah.
But that's my mowing shirt, my basketball playing shirt, my painting the room shirt, my moving furniture shirt, my cooking
weeds shirt,
dirty thing.
Doing weeds shirt.
That's, you name it. Time is now. Thanks, Cubes.
So I'm saying they definitely win one of the next two. Would not be surprised at all if they win both of them. And at that point, they're just flat out due for a big win.
And I also wouldn't be surprised if they win one and then lose one, and it's not pretty. And they win one in such a way that it's not pretty, and lose one in such a way that it's not pretty, and everybody's hanging their head. I think these teams play each other close, and I think that the Mavs don't have that knack this year of stepping on the neck when it's time. And so anything can happen. It could go either way. We could meet you guys next week and be, you know, ready to go battle some more, or we might be just on the precipice of the cliff just looking over. It could really go one or two either way. I mean
the way I've seen it is
screw predictions at this point.
The way I've seen it is that they're playing towards the media the right way by saying that it's in the past, we've got to move forward, it's two bad losses. But I think deep down in their belly, they're saying, we're pissed off that we lost these two games. We let them get away from us. We've got to handle our business.
Boy, I definitely think they feel like that too.
And they have to send a message these next two games.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pissed offness and fire in the belly. And that's why I do think that there won't be a sweep, and there's going to be some bowing of chests, and they're not going to want to go down without a fight.
I'm anxious to see what happens after the first half of the first quarter, after all the ruckus and the game has kind of settled into a flow. I'm anxious to see what happens.
And that's what I was impressed with Dallas in the first game of game one. In the first quarter, they handled the storm of Oklahoma City, and they actually had a lead after the first quarter. So,
yeah, I couldn't have drawn game one up any better other than that, you know, last second shot going in. That was awesome.
So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of adjustments are made in terms of Dallas defensively, because offensively I think they know what they want to do. It's just that they have to hope it goes well, but obviously they have to see what they do defensively. And you know, we'll have you covered either way what happens with these adjustments in these games. Well, like, do you have a problem next Tuesday or Wednesday, Rylan or Tim?
No and no.
Tuesday the 8th or Wednesday the 9th? Either of those a problem?
Shouldn't be, no.
Okay, we'll pick one of those two. We're either talking about a game 6 upcoming or
what
the hell happened?
The wrap-up, season wrap-up show.
So we'll determine over the weekend which game, which day that will be.
And we need a guest for that one.
Okay. When would Game 7
be? I'm putting
that on you. Okay. When would Game 7 be?
Game 7 would be on Saturday the 12th.
Okay.
So another big thing is that if they win the next two and they whatever happens Monday, they'll have 2 days off before Game 6.
Right, yeah.
So they'd have plenty of rest.
If we end up with either a Game 6 or a womp-womp, we have to hear from somebody.
We'll have a guest.
We have to hear from one of our leaders.
Okay.
Either way.
I'll get a guest.
Oh, no, yeah. So the season could still be alive and well by the time we meet. Okay. I'm
one way or another.
I got my dates confused, man.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. We're either talking, we're commiserating, or we're...
Right.
We're
when I heard want, I thought end of season. That's what I was thinking. But yes.
Or we're putting our head down, ready to go for Game 6. Right. So we will determine over this weekend what day that will be, either Tuesday the 8th or Wednesday the 9th. Rylan, how do you find this show?
You can find this show by Googling for Mavericks Outsider Report. It's ingenious. I know a guy, he started a thing called Google. No, Google.
Was it Delonte?
Yeah. Delonte probably wishes he started Google. Yeah, so you can Google Mavericks Outsider Report. It's going to take you one of two places. You can find us that way on iTunes, or you can just go to the iTunes store and search for Mavericks Outsider Report. Either way, you'll be able to subscribe to our weekly podcast automatically and for free. It'll be delivered to your front doorstep in a nice shiny package with a bow, no questions asked, and no action on your part, to your computer, your iPad, your iPhone, whatever it is that you like to use that you have synced up with iTunes. Super easy, and like I said, it's free. You can also go to podomatic.com, podomatic.com, and search for Mavericks Outsider Report there. There you'll be able to get archives of the show back about 20 weeks worth or so. You'll be able to listen to those at your leisure or the most current one via your browser. You can also subscribe there via an RSS feed if you're anti-iTunes. And if you are anti-iTunes,
wow,
that means you're a nerd anyway and you know what RSS means. If you're like me and you just want your wife to be able to use your computer, you just roll with iTunes. I know what XML is too, guys, okay? All right? You don't have to brag. So anyway, that's the way to find us, and you really should do it. You should subscribe one way or the other because it's easy. And it's automatic, and it makes us look good. We want you to help us look good, and in return, we will help you look good. How can we help you look good? Maybe by interacting with you on Twitter. Brian Ballin with Brian. This guy, this gentleman, has you covered on Twitter for coverage of the Mavericks. He's at games. He's at practices. He's traveling with the team during the playoffs, which is an indispensable resource to have at your disposal. He's going to keep you up to date on what the players are saying, what the coaches are saying. He's going to keep you up to date on the stories he's writing for MavsFastBreak.com and also his new site, BallinWithBrian.com.
This is true. I'm starting
to... They gave you a website?
I made my own website. No.
He gave him a website.
I said, Brian, you're doing such a great job. Here's your own website. So we're going to be talking NBA. We're going to be talking Mavs, whatever. It's going to be a smorgasbord of blogging information.
Yes, indeed. So go there and get your fill of Ballin' with Brian on Twitter. Ballin' with B-R-Y-A-N. You will not be disappointed. You can also follow Tim Koger on Twitter, T-A-Koger, K-O-G-E-R. He's out there. He's tweeting Mavs.
Have I been missing tweets, or are you stealth mode right now?
Tweet me. Dude, I feel like I've been out.
Okay.
I've been out in the public, man.
Okay.
Did you remove me accidentally?
No. That's definitely not the case. I must have been missing it then. And then obviously we need
I don't know about you guys, but I like to watch a guy get his ass whooped.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't really? And then you've got to follow Rylan, of course, at R-H-Y-L-A-N-R-O-W-E. Rylan Rowe.
You won't regret it, I promise.
There's HSOs all over the place. There's food all over the place.
There's food HSOs. There's life HSOs. There's a lot of sports talk. And I'd like to think that it's all quality.
It is.
It might not all be, but it's pretty good signal-to-noise ratio compared to some people.
The three in here bring quality.
I agree. This is strong, strong Twitter vibes. Strong with the Twitter.
I would say strong to quite strong.
Yes. So thanks again for listening. We certainly appreciate that... you chose to turn your intranet dial our way this week. All of our loyal listeners, especially you guys that subscribe and listen to the stream, you all are awesome.
Woo!
Give us feedback. Let us know how we're doing.
Love the listeners.
And, you know, obviously as the season winds down, we'll get a little more loose with our schedule and our format, but we'll be keeping you guys up to date with what we're talking about and when we're talking about it and why we're talking about it. So Stick with us. Stay close. We got Mavericks playoffs coming up.
Now.
Important stuff.
Yeah, everything. The world is around us.
And the beards are so strong in this
room
right
now.
Mine's about to get trimmed.
Mine too.
Mine too. Look, you see this?
That looks great, so, man.
I know.
It's you got like four black dots on your chin. That's about it.
I know. That means it's
solid, man.
It's stout right
Real
now.
Real solid.
It's stout.
Four black dots.
That's stout, man. You don't know. You don't know. That's a good 2 weeks right there. That's good 2 weeks.
Oh, man. Seriously, how could you not like the strong beard situation going on in here? So, yeah, thanks again. We appreciate it. It was a fun week, gentlemen, and we will be back on either May 8th or 9th. Or 7th or 8th?
8th or 9th.
8th or 9th to... I was going to say finish things up.
Oh.
I hope that wasn't a Freudian slip. I didn't mean that. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I didn't say before last show I said this was going 7.
You did say that.
You're on record. This is 7?
I said this was a 7-game series.
And then what do I say?
I'm on the fence.
On the fence.
He does not give predictions.
Because I'm not qualified.
Yeah. So, yeah. We will see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Word.
Shut it down! Oh, let's go home!
That is a wrap.
Woo! I don't trust him. His name is Rylan.
You need protection when I'm on the mic because my mouth is like a 9 millimeter with